Who the fuck is that guy? What? Hear what I say. We are the business today. Fuck shit is finished today. What? RT and J. We the new PB&J. We drop the classic today.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm hoping it works when I call you. So. But yeah, everything's should be recording just fine. Perfect quality. I just had to reinstall things, which, you know, that's how life goes.
Yeah, it's super time-consuming and annoying when things you expect to work don't work.
Yeah,
I find
yeah.
cars and computers are the most aggravating because you expect them to work, and then when they don't and you need them, it sucks.
It's like the other day I threw a treat to the dog. He always gets a little dentist stick after dinner.
Oh, the green ones?
No, I was gonna say flesh colored, brownish.
Gross.
And, every day every day he gets one after dinner. So I tossed it to him and I didn't whip it at him like a baseball or anything like that. I didn't chuck it at him. I tossed it. There was an arc to it and everything. And it just, he kind of looked at it and it just bounced right off his nose. And he kind of looked at me and I looked at him and there was like this mutual shame where he's like, I don't really know what just happened here. Like, I'm the dog. This is the one thing I do in life is you throw me food and I catch it. And I totally missed it. I'm like Bill Buckner in the World Series or something here, like the most routine, basic thing in the world. It didn't happen. And so, your Skype networking and my Skype net recording, exact same thing as a dog losing itself.
Similar. There's a video I've seen a couple times where it's like super slow motion. I think it's a golden retriever where they're throwing treats and food up to it and it can never catch it. It bounces off its face. It's pretty good. My dog went outside today, ate its own frozen poop, came back inside, puked it up all over our bedroom rug, and then ate it again.
Well, at least she ate it again.
Well, so I'm like, what is she doing in there? And I went in and I saw something. I'm like, what is she eating? Then I got closer. I'm like, oh, she must have puked that back up. It had like grass and stuff in it and she had already started eating it. So I let her finish it.
Oh my gosh.
Cause I didn't want to have to pick up like the poop vomit, like warm and flush it down the toilet. You know what I mean? I'm like, she already started eating it. Just finish it. Then I cleaned it up a little.
It's not really like helping your case. It's like, you know, I saw the dog eating his own shit inside and I just like, well, I don't want to clean that up. Have at it, girl.
Yeah.
Here's a little hot sauce. Enjoy.
She's going to go outside and eat some more later anyway. I don't know what to do with her. She got her shots today though, so she doesn't have diabetes as much, so that's a plus. Yeah. Welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Michael Coughlin. We're going to bring you all the news in MMA from the past week and some current events that have gone on in the world over the last week or so. I know you did a show earlier with old James Swift there about the State of the Union address. I did not catch all of that.
No one did.
What was your big takeaway?
That nothing really happened.
Yeah, I thought Trump did a decent job. Like, you, considering the pressure he was under and his ability to veer off in different paths. The teleprompter was there. He followed it and he did okay. My personal favorite part was where he started like making hand gestures over to the Democrats when he was talking about, I forget what he was talking about, but, something about poverty or like employment being up. He like waves over to them, like mocking them and they're all sitting there all pissed off. That was my favorite part of the whole thing.
I gotta say though, if Trump wants my vote in 2020, he's got to ramp back up the crazy. I ain't voting for normal Trump. Like, he's got to do something. And I'm sure he's got something on the plate. He's not going to go too long without pissing somebody off. February is Black History Month, so he's got an entire month to do shit. But I don't want this thing to settle down.
I don't think it's going to. I think his first big speech, he was pretty normal too. Remember they were calling him, he seemed presidential, he's going to be okay, and... Yeah,
oh, plus the memo's coming out. Oh yeah, that'll do it. That's definitely gonna bring back the crazy. I'm not worried anymore.
Yeah, I haven't seen much on his Twitter lately blowing up either, so maybe he's getting tired. He's a year in, he might be getting bored.
I would not be surprised if Donald Trump is already looking around going, alright, I did this. What's next? Can I run the UN? I bet I can make that happen. Let's see what I can do there. Then next, I'm going to Europe. My wife's European. I know everything there is to know about Europe. I'd be the best European politician there ever was. Hey, Slovakia or whatever country you're from, whore. I'm going over and I'm going to be your new president. Because I bet dollars to donuts says he does not know what the name of her country is.
He must. I bet you he does.
Slovakia, Slovenia. I bet he's made the mistake.
Maybe.
Like, would
I wonder
it really
if he calls
be
it a shithole.
I'm sure. Oh, I am sure. I bet he made some sort of remark about, like, I have to give your father a goat or something like that. Like, you just know he has humiliated her for that homeland.
The State of the Union's kind of a stupid thing, isn't it? I kind of hate it. Like, I usually watch it every year, but I'm like, it's the same shtick every time. Like, it'd be nice if some president just didn't trot out people and make them stand up and they cry and everyone
claps. That's what I was hoping for. I assume Trump is going to go full crazy with it.
Or just give a speech. Just give a normal speech. Like, it irritated me when he had like the grieving parents up and crying. Like, and I know they do stuff, and it's not just Trump. I know it's been done over the years with all presidents, but at the same time, it's like bringing out these grieving people with kids who got shot and murdered or whatever. It's just like, feels so like exploitative.
There was one scene with
like,
I think it was like a black family or something, and I think somebody kid had been shot, and you know, you could see them, and for them, this wasn't politics. Like, he's just up there talking. And again, yeah, you're right. Everybody does it, but I'm totally with you. I hate that stuff. It's always so cringeworthy. I guess it works because they keep doing it, but,
there was obviously stuff that you probably agreed with and disagreed with. Like the immigration stuff always gets me because it's like my whole life I've worked with people from like all over the world in like kitchens and restaurants. It's what I do. Like, I've never had a problem with anybody from anywhere ever. Most of the people are coming here working two jobs and busting their asses to get by. And it's like, I don't know. I just feel like saying illegal immigrants killed these people's families and kids. It's like, yeah, maybe they did, but I think that's a rare instance. And there's plenty of native-born Americans killing people too. It's just like that kind of stuff.
No, I hear you. You want to talk about how all the Native Americans are killing people? Is that what you're saying?
No, but you know what I mean. It's not just illegal immigrants murdering people. Most of the murders here are committed by
black people.
Legal. Yes. But anyway,
slaves.
The
one class of people that were actually made legal. At one point.
What do you mean?
Like when we freed the slaves, like there was a whole bunch of people and we said, okay, all of you are now, actually we really said, all of you are now humans, but you know, six of one, half dozen of the other.
Yeah. Anyway, this past weekend, what was it? January 27th. It was a Saturday night. This was a UFC on Big Fox card. You wouldn't be able to tell by the lineup. It was actually a UFC on Fox 27, Jacare versus Brunson, number 2. This was held at the Spectrum Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. In the main event, Jacare defeated Brunson by TKO. It was a head kick followed by punches on the ground. Kind of almost on the ground. He was staggered. Some people thought it was an early stoppage, but Brunson was definitely rocked, taking shots to the head, and the ref stepped in and stopped it.
Yeah, I mean, the world was clamoring for a rematch between these two. They just couldn't stop talking about that first fight. Like, oh yeah, Derek Brunson and Jacare, that's what we need. The UFC is like the opposite of WWE in that sense, though, in that you know they booked like a show in North Carolina, and they're like, oh shit, we need somebody who's from North Carolina that we can have fight. Whereas the WWE be like, oh, you're from there? Yeah, you're going to go home. We're not going to put you on TV, or we're just going to bury you. Which I guess actually did end up happening here. But
is Brunson from?
Yeah, they said that during the telecast. And as soon as I heard that, I go, oh, okay, now I understand why he's in the main event here. Because otherwise, who is putting Derek Brunson in a fucking main event? Like, come on. And well, they're not going to do it again, I'm sure, because you know, he lost because not very good, and I don't even really think Jacare is. I didn't really think Jacare looked all that great. I thought Brunson was doing all right for a while, and he just got kicked in the head. And sometimes when you get kicked in the head, bad shit happens.
Yeah, Brunson's just like a notch down from those top five guys. Like, I think he's top 10, but he can never beat any of those, you know, the Weidmans, Rockholds, Whitakers, Romeros. You wouldn't imagine him beating them, but he's competitive with pretty much everybody else. As far as Jacare goes,
he and David Brandt should fight each other every other month.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're the same, similar level for sure. As far as Jacare goes, he is looking for a title shot coming off this win, but I don't think Brunson's really a big enough name to do it. I know there's been some talk about him and Weidman, Jacare versus Weidman next, with the winner of that maybe getting a title shot, depending how, you know, the interim title works out and Robert Whittaker's organs are doing. If they're still not half eaten, he could be back sooner. So there's a little movement in the middleweight division right now.
Those two are going to fight, and it's going to be for a title. Just watch it happen. I bet Whittaker has to drop the title due to his sickness, and then you're going to have a real champion, and then they're going to be delayed or something, and then we have Weidman and Jacare for another interim championship.
Okay. Well, we'll mark that down and remember it. Then also, I mean, this card for Fox card was pretty bad, man. Like, I know every other week we probably talk about this, but it's like they load up a couple shows and they've got nothing for the next couple months. And that's where we're at now. In the semi-main event, we had Andre Touchy-Feely defeating Dennis Bermudez by split decision. Weird scores here. 29-28, 27-30. And 29-28. You don't see that often. Competitive fight. I don't honestly remember that much of it.
Yeah, no, neither do I really. It happened. I remember watching it thinking Andre Feely's doing better than I expected him to do. Like his wrestling in particular, I was like, I didn't know he could wrestle that well, because I think of Bermudez as being a good wrestler. Right. But the fight was just dull and you're an asshole with a tattoo on your neck. I don't really care what you do in life.
Before that, we had Gregor Gillespie defeating Jordan Rinaldi by TKO at 4:46 of the first round. Gillespie just dominated in this fight, man. He kind of took Rinaldi down and got back mount, just landed punches. And I think he had his back when he was landing punches, and the ref stepped in. He looked like... I want to say a killer because Rinaldi's not really a name, but he looked really, really good and impressive. I think he's undefeated like 11-0 now.
Yeah, he's 11-0, 4-0 in the UFC, former national champion wrestler. And when I watched it, like, he was the one person on the show that I went, oh, okay. Like, I was like, this guy's emerged. I think he's proven that he needs to be at the next level in his career. But again, he is still relatively new to the sport. So I think it's good that he's been brought along, but look, what he did out there, it was scary. Like the power he had with his ground to pound, it wasn't Khabib level power, because Khabib's got that weird thing where it just seems heavier. But Gillespie, he just hits hard. But he's got to get the right positioning, but he's a hell of a wrestler, so he'll probably be able to do that. So he's going to probably get tapped out by somebody next, but until that time comes, he could be the kind of, he should probably be getting ready to fight, like, I would say, like, a Michael Johnson level guy, like a former top five, kind of on down, let's see what we got type of fighter.
It's interesting. He's older than you would think. I think he's like 31.
30. Yeah, he's a little older, yeah.
Because you don't know the name, you see 10-0, you'd expect him to be, 25. He won the national championship in 07, so it was 11 years ago.
Yeah, that is, like, yeah, you hear, like, former national champion, undefeated, all this stuff. You go, 25, 26 or something. Nope, 31. So somebody probably had a drug problem for a while.
Good theory. Drew Bendober defeated Frank Camacho by unanimous decision, 29-28, 29-28, and 30-27 in the opener.
I don't remember this at all.
I don't think I kind of remember it. I watched some of this and I fell asleep during it. I was old and tired that night.
I remember more of like the undercard because it had fights I actually wanted to see.
Really?
Well, it had like some names that I recognized.
The one name I recognize a few names too, but I guess the most impressive performance on the undercard was Mirsad Bektik defeating Godofredo Pepe by TKO. He landed a weird body punch that just like took Pepe down, and he landed some shots, but it wasn't like a liver shot. It was like to the middle of his chest. It was like a heart punch almost.
Yeah,
it's rare you see that where that takes a guy out.
Yeah, it's one of the things that the kidney is able to be hit there. Really? You see it every once in a while, guys get that right there, but, and you could just tell, like, there's nothing more scarier than seeing some of the toughest human beings in the world get hit in the body and just flop to the ground. Like, you know, Ric Flair rolling around being an idiot type of flop, and you just go, oh man, this guy's in pain. These are people that get punched in the head a lot and they don't even care. You kick them until their shins bleed and they're fine. You punch them one time in the body in the right place and the mightiest of men are fallen.
Yeah, it was impressive. I mean, Bektik had had a lot of promise and a lot of hype around him until that Elkins fight where he was dominating Elkins and lost it. But this was a good win for him, got him back on track. So he's a guy to watch. Bobby Green defeated Eric Koch by unanimous decision. And, I mean, every other fight was pretty much decisions on that prelim card on FS1.
Yeah, the things I remembered actually were Ji-Yun Kim defeating Justine Kish. Just because I thought Kim looked kind of like I hadn't seen her before, and she looked kind of athletic and a good size for the division there. And she's Korean, so she'll stand out. And Ronda Marcos' breasts are fantastic.
Hmm.
Yeah, I just they were to the point where at one point I go, okay, those are very noticeable in there. Like you're Misha Tate like.
Pregnant and getting married.
Damn right.
Fight of the night actually went to Dober and Camacho, and performances went to Jacare and Bektik. So that was your UFC on Fox. 10,000 in attendance, gate was 900,000. Moving along. Oh, one other note on this show. Shockingly, this was the lowest rated UFC on Fox ever. Out of 27 shows, this was the lowest.
Didn't they just have like the third lowest?
I think so. Or it was the third lowest for like that time period or something. I don't know. It did 1.7 million viewers. The previous like record low was 1.9 million on August 27th, 2016 for Maya versus Condit.
Ooh.
Here's the thing though. The lineup sucked. Like,
oh, yeah.
I wonder, but wouldn't you think, like, in your final year, you're looking for a new TV deal. You're trying to, like, triple what these networks are going to pay you. And you're putting on these suck shows on Fox where you're doing record low ratings. You had to know Jacare versus Derek Brunson. That's like, you know, a FS1 main event. That could easily be an FS1 main event. You wouldn't be like, wow, that's a really good FS1. You wouldn't even say it. You'd be like, yeah, all right, I'll watch that.
Be like
but
a,
for
a
Fox, it's lame considering some of the fighters they've had on Fox in the past.
Yeah, it would be a solid main event before, like, a pay-per-view went on the air. You'd be like, oh, okay. But, yeah, I kind of thought about that and, like, cause you like, sent me that video or whatever, Floyd Mayweather walking the octagon. And like, yes. I see WWE's doing the same thing with Ronda Rousey, where this whole idea like, oh, you're gonna pop a rating. And yes, you always wanna be strong at the end, but these people are handing out contracts in worth billions of dollars. I don't think they're good. I would at least hope they're not dumb enough to be like, huh, you guys were kinda sitting out there, but all of a sudden this year, you just really popped it. I wonder if anything different happened. And they would, you know, look at the totality of what you're doing. And I think also with the UFC, they really probably do offer the kind of ratings that are just so incredible across the board for what they can give a company. You know, 50 some odd shows a year of pretty solid live ratings. That's pretty valuable in and of itself. I don't know if you really need to worry about going from like a 2 million viewers on Big Fox to 2.5 or 3. Still no excuse for having such a shit-ass main event for any show, but.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I don't know what the theory behind it is, but you think you would try and go balls to the walls this year and, you know, put some bigger names on free TV to get those ratings
this
up.
Because what they got for big names.
I know, but I would think you get the ratings up and maybe you do a little less on pay-per-view this year because you're trying to go for that huge TV contract because you know that's where all the money is. You'd rather get an extra $100 million a year based on these huge ratings and say your average was 3 million viewers on Fox. Now you're starting in January behind the eight ball where you're averaging 1.7 million and got to bring it up the rest of the year. And we already know one of the main events is like Gaethje versus Poirier, which is a freaking awesome fight. I can't wait for that fight, but I don't know what it does for ratings. Maybe actually, one is really a draw.
That one is, I think, a fair main event because it's just two guys who are in like your top five who are action and they're, you know, as personable as you're going to probably get these days. Eventually you just got to go with the cards you're dealt. Like they can't all be, you know, Conor McGregor types. And realistically they're in a cycle where they're in a turn where they're cycling through new stars. You know, we're seeing the turnover happen in the welterweight division and middleweight division where some of the old guards come in and go in. And I think it's just going to take a little bit of time, but it's okay. Cause you know, Brock's going to fight this year and Conor's going to fight this year and Conor's going to fight again this year. And Floyd's going to fight this year. We heard all this before.
There's also a Bellator card on Friday night. This was number...
Hey! No, not you, dog. Sorry for waking you up, buddy. Do you know what the number was for Bellator? Yeah, no, I'll go fuck myself, sorry. I think it's like 196.
Ah, 193, you were close.
Son of a bitch.
I'm looking forward to when the Bellator shows catch up to the UFC pay-per-view. That's going to be fun. I've been looking forward to that for a while.
If Donald Trump was running Bellator, he would make a big deal out of that.
It'll happen eventually, probably this year.
Oh, for sure this
think.
Year.
Yeah. They've kind of cut back on shows, Bellator.
I used to feel like they had a show
every week. You know?
Yeah, because I mean, they got about 20, they're what, 25, 26 behind right now. They'd have to make up that many and the UFC's gonna still have at least 12 numbered shows. Mm. So it might come close, it might come down to the wire though. Something to watch out for everybody.
I'm not gonna be able to sleep. This one took place at the Pechanga Resort and Casino in Temecula, California. And the main event, in a catchweight fight at 180 pounds, Lorenz Larkin defeated Fernando Gonzalez. Another strong main event for the weekend. Scores were 29-28, 30-27.
I actually watched this.
I saw it too. I had it on in the background.
It was embarrassing. I use that word a lot these days to describe MMA, I think. But just seeing the physical difference between Larkin and what's-his-face, where like the other dude was like, okay, like if you saw him at the gym, you'd be like, hey, that guy kind of works out. He's in okay shape. Whereas Larkin, you go, oh, that's a super athlete. And he's in there fighting. He just hits so much faster and harder, but he couldn't put him away. And that was sad. And everything was sad. It's Bellator.
I agree.
Like the seriously, they should only be running shows that have their fucking title tournament in it. Just make that the only thing I follow in Bellator. I like the Bellator tournaments, damn it. I miss good old days. It was perfect. You'd have like a nice little story for about 4 or 5 months, maybe 3 to 4 months. 5 months seems a little long. You know, like, oh, this guy fought, and you could kind of follow guys, like, oh, look at that, David Rickles. I remember him. He just fought like 3 weeks ago. That's kind of crazy. Now, yes, it probably shortened careers and likely impacted the quality of life men will have later on in their life, but damn it, it made it for easier TV to watch on a Friday night.
You know who's always good? For some reason I found entertaining, Cole Conrad. Remember he was like their first like champ, like he was an NCAA heavyweight champ, yeah. But he was like, he did not look like he should be good at fighting. And he like never lost, he retired undefeated or whatever, but yeah. He was like really flabby and like looked totally out of shape, but I guess he wasn't.
But he was just an outstanding actual athlete.
Yeah.
Like he was a really good athlete, and he was a heavyweight in a division that had, like, no heavyweights. And, yeah, he got, like, out at, like, he's, like, 12-0, and everybody's like, oh, maybe he's going to go to the UFC. And it's like, no, I got offered a really good job like, at, like, a supermarket chain in Minneapolis or something like that. It was, like, the most unglamorous. It was kind of like the very first version of Al Iaquinta saying, fuck this, I'm going to go sell houses.
The rest of that Bellator card didn't have much going on. The one thing I noticed, though, was on the prelims, Tyrell, they had – two heavyweight fights. Tyrell Fortune defeated Joe Hernandez and Tyree Fortune defeated Michael Quintero. I found it interesting they had almost identical names. I don't know if they're brothers or related or what the story is.
Yeah, they're part of the, what you didn't hear is that their last names are both Noguera.
I didn't hear that. No. So yeah, there, that was, Bellator 193 in Temecula. In other news, the big story of the weekend was,
if I ever go to Temecula, I'm going to get so, like, stupidly happy, and people are going to look at me like, why? I'm going to be like, I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of fighting that happens in Temecula. Like, if I ever see the Mohegan Sun Casino, I'm going to be like, ooh, the Mohegan Sun. I remember all this. There's been, like, lots of UFCs here, and people be like, dude, it's a shitty casino in Connecticut. I'm like, fuck you. Don't kill my dreams.
It's actually not bad. I mean, I haven't been there in probably 10 years, but back
speaking
in the day.
Speaking of shitty casinos.
Yes.
I regret it to this day for a number of reasons, a lot now, but, at our family cabin in Minnesota, there's this Indian casino up there. And, you know, we kind of go there, like the shitty buffet. My brother and I ate there back to back nights last year. I don't remember the second night at all, but I remember, but we ate there. Anyways, my dad and my brother were up there probably a decade ago. Yeah, about a decade ago, I guess. And they were at the Indian casino, and they went and they saw there was a comedian headlining a show there. And so they went and watched the guy. It was Bill Cosby.
That's yeah. Pretty random.
I know. In like the middle of nowhere.
How old was he at the time?
Was he
10
still,
years ago?
Yeah, probably still in raping age.
I never found Cosby that funny, to be honest.
Oh, some of that stuff is pretty good.
Like, he makes some good faces, I guess, but, I mean, I don't know. Oh, he never really did it for me.
He's very known for his facials.
Yes, I've heard. They can knock you out. Anyway, this past weekend we had the Royal Rumble, the 2018 Royal Rumble. I know you saw it. I really only saw the Women's Battle Royal, or the Royal Rumble, whatever you want to call it, the first ever. It was won by Asuka. And then Ronda Rousey debuted in the WWE. She walked down to the aisle to the Joan Jett song, Bad Reputation. She wore Roddy Piper's old leather jacket. And she didn't actually say anything. She got into the ring. I think Asuka slapped her hand or something. She shakes Stephanie's hand and pointed to the WrestleMania sign and left. I personally thought she looked super awkward and uncomfortable, and it kind of concerned me for her future in wrestling. Yeah. But it made a lot of news. It was all over the place. I think the Raw rating the night after the Rumble was way up. I guess bottom line was, what did you think of Rousey's debut in WWE?
Was she on Raw?
No, she was not. I think it helped with the ratings the following night. I think people thought she'd be there.
That's a good little way to get a double bump out of her for the ratings.
Mm.
When she came out, and we saw it before WrestleMania, I think she's just really awkward as a human being. When she stood there, she didn't know how to stand. And when Jay slapped her hand away, she kind of gave like this look. Like, she was just so overacting. Like, it's very, very obvious why her acting career didn't go anywhere, because she's piss poor acting by pro wrestling standards. And she just looks like she's trying to be a pro wrestler, like her idea of it. And it's really awful. She really sucks at it. And I don't know what she, I mean, look, physically, who, and I have no idea what she'll do. Obviously, she's an Olympian and all that. But even then, like, all we've ever really seen her do athletically is throw people in 30 seconds and tap them out. You know, she's not, I don't know, I can't imagine seeing Ronda Rousey do a fucking moonsault or anything like that. Mark Coleman did. But I don't think Ronda Rousey's gonna do that. And I think the novelty's gonna wear off real quick, because she's not that good at talking. I think she doesn't look right. There's just something about her. Plus, I guess maybe I'm a little biased because I'm an asshole, but I felt like some, like the coverage, when I saw it, it kind of gave this feeling of like, hey, Ronda Rousey's in WWE. They could have very easily been like, Ronda Rousey, it's going to be on Big Brother or something like that. We were just like, oh, this is where her career's at now, huh? Oh, all right. Like, everybody's like, yep, the trailer trash is doing pro wrestling now, everybody. She got her ass kicked in real fighting, and she married the wife beater. Now she's doing pro wrestling.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, Brock is a unique case, obviously. Obviously, he wrestled, went to UFC, went back to wrestling, then back to UFC again and back to wrestling again. But it's worked well for him. He's not working much and he makes, whatever, $5 million a year. It's a pretty sweet deal. And it's like Rousey supposedly has been a wrestling fan her whole life. I don't know how true that is, because I always got the feeling that Baszler was really the wrestling fan and she kind of got Rousey back into wrestling, was always kind of my impression of how it went, but I don't know.
I'm sure she watched it, but also yeah. The fact, like, her gimmick is like, I'm Rowdy, like, she's wearing the Roddy Piper thing and this and that. It's like, right. There's no way she's ever seen Roddy Piper for real. She's just too, like, she's too young.
She said she based her whole, like, MMA career and interviews on Piper.
She's like,
I think there was some kind of connection with Jean LaBelle or something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something there, but yeah, she really sounded like Roddy Piper there, yeah. I'm guessing she was a pro wrestling fan in the sense of, like, everybody who's kind of in the world of athletics in some way watches pro wrestling, but she couldn't have been a real fan, because at the age when you really would have been a fan of this stuff, she was training like 12 hours a day in judo. You know, yeah. When I read that autobiography, the hell that her life was, she had no fan of pro wrestling. She saw Hulk Hogan and somebody said, hey, this guy's Roddy Piper, whatever the fuck his dumb name is, and you could be like him. Hey, do you hate black people? Do you want to make some money off of it?
She claims she's going to go full time. What do you think that means? She plans on doing this the next couple of years. She said she turned down other gigs that could have paid her more money.
That's a lie.
But she's wanted to do this her whole life. And like the articles I read, and I think she was even as quoted as saying she's going to be a full time WWE performer, wrestler, sports entertainer. Do you buy that? Like, what does full time mean? Like the Brock schedule, maybe? Like, I can't imagine her going on the road and wrestling in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, she's not going to be at the Sioux Falls Convention Center, you know, taking kicks to the thigh from Asuka or something like that. I don't think she and Nikki Bella are going to have a best of seven throughout Omaha, Nebraska and Grand Junction.
Ronda Rousey's not going to be at the Cape Cod Melody Tent this summer?
I think we actually made these exact same jokes last week.
No, we talked about the Melody Tent, but I'll be curious to see what that means. I gotta imagine it's part time, but maybe she feels like she's gotta dedicate herself to it, like it's a full time job, and she's gotta practice and, you know, take bumps even when she's not on the road to get better. I don't know.
Full time for her might just be TV. Yeah. That might be what she thinks full time is.
Is TV every week? She's going to go to every Raw? Because that's the other thing. It's like you want to try and keep her special. I mean, that's a problem with a lot of things. Like we talk about all the oversaturation with UFC and stuff. It's like part of the reason this Fox show bombs is because there's so many freaking shows and they don't have enough guys and enough stars to make it work, where people are eagerly awaiting all these shows. You can't do it all the time. And it can kind of be the same thing in wrestling, where it's like if Ronda's there every week, every time she comes in and wrestles or is bumping for people or cutting lousy promos, it's going to be less and less special every time. And I don't think you want her on TV a lot. I think a couple appearances here and there, she beats the shit out of some people, arm bars them, and, you know, doesn't say a lot and leaves some mystery. I don't think you want her there every week because it's going to be diminishing returns.
The problem is, I have no idea how she could ever improve. She's probably gonna she'll probably do a lot of training down there in Florida. And yes, it'll be full time in some ways, but it's not really. It's not that grind of the road. And I think that's the kind of shit that people be like, yeah, you're not really full time. Plus, she wants to have a baby. She's been planning that since Australia. So I don't know when that's gonna happen, but then she'll just get bored with wrestling and go become a mom. But 2 years after that, she'll probably get bored with that. And, I don't know what she's gonna do after that. Piano.
If you were booking her, who would you have her wrestle first? What would be the way to promote this?
It looks like they're either doing Asuka or Brie Bella, which was just Nikki Bella, sorry. Which
well, there's also rumors that they're trying to do a mixed tag with Triple H and Steph versus her and Rock. But
that'd be amazing. That'd be so fucking great if Triple H and Stephanie both said, "No, we're gonna be in the biggest match in wrestling." Like neither one of us is actually really in this company as a wrestler or anything like that, but we want to have fun. You could almost kind of see the logic, except for. It's just like with Triple H, buddying up with Finn Balor and all that. It's just pathetic. I'm so done with this loser old man desperately trying to insert him into all this stuff. Just go away. You've had your time. I'm so done with it. And then after the match, he'd hold their hand up and they'd be smiling, being like, look at all this publicity we got. We're so smart. And it's just like, this must be what people feel like when they see too much of Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump. Just be like, just shut the fuck up and go away. You weren't even born on second base and you hit a double. You're born on the top of the ninth with the score 15-0, thinking you're the greatest baseball player ever because you just gotta walk. Like, just shut up. So yeah, well, I would have her face, Asuka.
Well, it's funny because if you can get The Rock in, the question's always, what else does he have going on? And usually he's got better opportunities than bumping around in a wrestling ring.
Ronda, he actually does turn down things to do wrestling.
If he could, make it work and be in a tag with Ronda, it's like, who would you have him go against? Cause in a way, Rock and Ronda have to go over. They're not going to job to some random heels. And then who should be the people who do the job for him? Who's going to get the rub? And I bet part of Triple H and Stephanie's mindset is we're going to be here forever.
That's been their mindset for 20 years.
And they're still there. And I'm not defending that. I'm not saying it's a good mindset, but that was the thing with Dana White for a long time, why people had a problem with him being like the face of the company and out there and cutting all these interviews and going on shows. But in his mind, he's like, I'm not going anywhere. This next fighter could get knocked out and be gone and never fight again. I'll be here forever. My brand has staying power. I'll be here indefinitely. And I wonder if some of that same mindset is there with Triple H and Steph.
It could be. To me, the question of like how you do the program is it would really center on The Rock. Like you can find anybody for Ronda to go up against. You could just randomly insert a woman. Like, it's like, which guy do they want to give the rub to? I wouldn't want to see it necessarily, but I could easily see it being somebody like the Miz and Maurice versus Rock and Ronda, or they could just go the easy route and do like, or Cena and Nikki Bella. But we've already seen Rock versus Triple H. I don't know. This company's got nothing new. Who cares? I don't even know who the fuck to give a shit about. Give Finn Balor somebody and do that.
I was listening to something funny. I forget what I was listening to, but they were talking about Ronda and how she's going to do in front of like a live crowd. And somebody was talking about, might have been Luke Thomas. Somebody wrote him a question or something. Anyway, and the question was, what if like the fans start chanting Holly Holm at her? Is she going to like freeze up? Like, or are the fans even smart enough to do that? Like, if she sucks and is stuttering and can't cut a promo and is freezing up, and the crowd shits on her, how's she gonna do? Because my take on her in the last couple of years is she doesn't do well when things don't go her way. And if the crowd turns on her, she might freeze and we might see like a meltdown, man. I don't know how good she can handle that based on her, you know, after the home loss, leaving the airport, crying with the pillow over her face. She won't do any press before the Nunes fight and won't even acknowledge those two fights even happened. Doesn't want to talk about them now. It's been like a couple years. It's like at some point you should move on and get past shit. And she can't. And I'm not even judging, but I wonder how she's going to deal with like that kind of adversity if she gets it at all.
Yeah, I don't know if it will really happen just cause she's going to have, the people like her right now. I can't actually imagine her truly being full time. So I don't think she's going to get like over pushed. It could backfire if people sense that she sucks and they're not WWE is pretty good at protecting people though. So I hope it happens though. I want to see her just stop in the middle of the ring and cry and run away.
Cause that's what she would do. Chant, we want Holly or something. Could be good. Hopefully they don't go to any smart cities.
I want to see her, I want to see her just freak out over something non-Holly related. Just be like, the crowd, they start chanting like, show us your tits or something like that. And she's like, how could you dare do that? I have a role model for little girls.
Speaking of role models for little girls, you mentioned him earlier, Floyd Mayweather Jr., actually put out two.
Didn't know where that one was going at all.
Two Instagram videos. I think Instagram or Twitter or something. Somebody was filming him with a phone of some sort and put it up online. Basically stepping into an MMA cage. I think it was, Syndicate in Las Vegas is where he was at. And, the second video he said, Floyd Money Mayweather, MMA, what are the odds? And I leave that question in your hands, Mr. Coughlin.
We are in that weirdo timeline. It would be very good for the UFC at the height of the Me Too movement to go out of the way to bring in a famous woman beater. Although nobody really gives a shit about that anymore, especially not with this fucking moron. I still don't think he's doing it. He's not.
No way. No.
He's not fucking doing it.
I like that we're going on the record right now, and saying he's not going to do it, which means he will, because we said Conor was never going to box him either.
That's right.
He called everyone stupid. But no, I mean, how much money? Like, I can't imagine. I can't imagine. But it gets people talking. It keeps his name out there. You would think since he had his retirement fight and just got, you know, another several hundred million dollars in pay that he wouldn't need this. But he is a real attention whore, it seems like.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around these days. And they're all competing with one another.
Yeah, yeah. So we're both going on record as saying Floyd Mayweather never fights MMA or in the UFC.
Yeah.
Okay, just confirming. Because we'll have to go back and play this in a year or two.
No. My answer is I think he will. Floyd will fight in the UFC. Floyd will not fight in the UFC.
Okay. Another guy who might be changing careers a little bit is Chuck Liddell. He has been booked as a contestant on Celebrity Big Brother, which I didn't even know Big Brother was still a show, but apparently it is. The cast of the show was revealed Saturday night during the Grammy Awards, with the season set to begin on February 7th on CBS.
Yeah, Omarosa's going to be in it.
Yeah, Liddell's going to be on there with Omarosa, Meta World Peace, Sugar Ray lead singer Mark McGrath, Real Housewives star Brandi Glanville, Keisha Knight from The Cosby Show. She might have some good stories.
No, geez.
American Pie actress Shannon Elizabeth.
I was just thinking about her the other day.
Gross. Actor James Maslow. Broadway actress Marissa Janet Winokur. And RuPaul's Drag Race judge Ross Matthews. And former Miss Universe Ariadna Gutierrez.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's a weird mix of nobodies and people that I kind of know, but only because they're in that weirdo Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, we just rotate people around circle.
Omarosa's really weird. Like, she's had, like, good jobs, like, professional jobs. She seems like a total psycho. And then she goes back on and does these shit reality shows with, like, literally D-list stars.
I think she's always just been this huckster. It just seems to be her gimmick. Yeah. I think it's really great that, like the two people that you could probably most closely associate from about 10 years ago with Dana White and Donald Trump are going to be living in a house together on TV.
that is true. I didn't even think of it that way. But,
you can see how this is exactly something that Ronda Rousey will be doing. Doesn't she just scream the kind of D-level celebrity who will be doing this, and she's just going to freak out, and she's going to be way fatter. And, like, she's going to be on TV for a long time. She's just going to be this trailer park trash burnout. It's going to be fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I think she made more money than Chuck. Might be better with it.
These morons just want attention.
I guess. I just wonder with her. I think Chuck's doing it for a payday. I don't think he cares about the attention. He hasn't been on TV much or doing much since he retired, right?
Yeah, I don't really. He had that UFC job that I'm sure kept him real busy.
That he was getting $350,000 a year for that.
I mean, what the fuck?
Did you see the one with Matt Hughes where...
Imagine you buy the UFC. You're doing your due diligence. You're looking over the books. You see that one. You just gotta be like, what are you fucking nuts? This man is a moron with a tattoo of some Japanese letters on the side of his fucking head in a mohawk. And you're giving him $300,000 a year? What could he possibly be doing?
Yeah, I love that Matt Hughes had the same deal, essentially. And I love that... There's a picture of him. Somebody took a picture from, like, the crowd. And, like, there's a bunch of TVs and people sitting cage side. And Hughes is one of them. Everybody else has the UFC on the monitor. And he's watching baseball, like, during the fights. It's so good.
Good for Hughes.
I laughed a lot. Well, everybody at the time was pissed off about Liddell and Hughes getting fired. They're like, everything they did for that company, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, there's some truth to that, whatever. But at the same time, it's like... Hughes did not give the impression that he was busting his ass to make that $300,000 a year.
No, and Hughes even said basically like, yeah, now I knew this shit was going to run out, and I took it, and I don't really blame him. I wasn't contributing at all to this, but I appreciated the paycheck, and I'm going to go, I bet I can beat that train across the train tracks.
So there was another headline that caught my eye this week. It said Dana White involved in alleged sexual assault.
Alleged.
Yes, and then I opened the article up and I read it a little more, and then I'm like, what the hell? So I'm going to read you what the actual article says. And
does it involve a stripper?
No, it's a misleading headline, but it's also a weird story. So police in Las Vegas are investigating an attempted sexual assault that occurred at the home of UFC President Dana White. Fox 5 in Las Vegas confirmed that the incident reportedly occurred during a party involving juveniles and that White and his family are not involved. Everyone involved is being cooperative in the investigation, and interviews are still being conducted, a police spokesperson said. White has not commented on the situation. Apparently there were a bunch of kids in his house and he wasn't there, neither was his family, and they tried to rape somebody. Like, what the hell's going on in his house?
So a bunch of kids just broke into Dana's house and threw a party? Like, that's pretty fucking ballsy, given that Dana's the head of an organization with 500 of the most dangerous human beings on earth. Like, this is worse than doing it at the mob's house or something like that. At least the mob's only got a couple of fat guys with 22s or something. Dana could just, like, he could call up the deadliest human beings who've ever lived to be like, hey, yeah, you owe me a favor. Look, if they say Dana has nothing to do with it, so be it. I can't really say that he does.
No, I mean,
it's always weird when shit like this happens, though, to people. Like, Dana White involved in alleged sexual assault. You'd be like, okay, I understand what's going on here. Like, there was a big party at his house and somebody almost got raped. You're like, yeah, okay, that man, I can see that happening, but he has nothing to do with it, and it's just a bunch of strange random kids broke in and did it. Like, okay, well, it only happens to people like Dana. Like, you never hear about, like, well, maybe it does happen everywhere else. We just don't hear about it in the news. But I don't really see a lot of stories. But, like, 79-year-old lady down the street was involved in alleged sexual assault when some of the local riffraff threw a kegger in her backyard and tried to rape Tracy.
So the police have cleared White and his family of any involvement. I'm reading another story.
I bet the kids knew his kids in high school or some shit.
The Las Vegas police confirms that neither Dana White nor any of his family have any involvement in this alleged incident. Everyone's being cooperative. Please know all parties involved are juveniles, and therefore we cannot release names nor many details. To clarify, these are only allegations at this point. None of the allegations have been confirmed. But it's like, it's gotta be something to see your name in the headlines with a sexual assault. Especially now.
That's some that's some fake news there. Like that's yeah. just, that's real bad clickbait. I know that they're juveniles and all, but I always thought that there's kind of something really sad about getting arrested for an alleged or like attempted sexual assault. Like that's kind of like, it feels like you're going to jail because you couldn't get it up. Like if you'd been able to get it up, then it would just be sexual assault. Like you couldn't rape someone. You're not even you have the worst instincts of a human being, but your dick doesn't work. And I know that's probably not really going to happen, but that's the world I'm going to live in.
Anyway, that's the Dana White news for the week.
Like, did you try to put your dick in her vagina and you missed? Yeah, it was just attempted.
Yeah, I'm not sure how sexual assault is defined. It's not something I usually partake in.
Usually.
So this is a weird story coming out of UFC 220. That was the one in Boston, in Old Texasuchusetts here. So I'm just going to read this verbatim from MMA Fighting. Everything was going as it usually does for Kyle Bochniak backstage at UFC 220. His hands were wrapped and approved by the commission. He went over the game plan with his coach. The referee for his fight with Brandon Davis came over and laid out the in-cage rules. Less than an hour later, Bochniak was warming up and getting in the zone, as he put it, for the important fight. Just as he was about to walk out, another referee came to him and said there had been a change. The first ref had told him the new unified rules of MMA would be in place for the fight. The second ref said to forget that. The commission had made a change and now it was actually the old rules. The ref comes in and says the athletic commission has changed it back to the old rules. Bochniak said, and I'm like, whoa, 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 what's the old rules again? Multiple sources told MMA Fighting that the early prelim fights at UFC 20 last Saturday in Boston were officiated using the new unified rules of MMA, while the later prelims, starting with Bochniak versus Davis and the main card, were all officiated under the old rules. A miscommunication between the UFC, the Massachusetts State Athletic Commission, and the referees working the card led to the rules being switched from new to old in the middle of the event, sources said. The biggest difference in the rule sets is a significant one, the definition of a grounded opponent.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking right now. Like, oh, I can't get hit in the head right now. Bam!
Touching the mat makes her a grounded fighter, thereby making kicks and knees to the head illegal in that position. The new rules change that language to say that a fighter cannot put just a single hand or finger down to be grounded. Both palms or both fists must be on the mat to make kicks or knees to the head illegal. Like, the classic situation for that was
Weidman.
The Weidman fight with... Who was he fighting?
Your buddy Musasi.
Yeah.
My buddy.
So sometimes things just pop in my head and I say them. That's pretty effed up, right?
Like, that's nobody about as knows bad the as rules it gets. Yeah.
During the show. Like, I can see maybe like a couple hours before. Oh, wait, what are we doing here? But you don't have it sorted out during the show. Like, if you just pick the rules, just go with them. You can't change them mid-show.
I want to make some social commentary, but hey, that's your government in action, man. But that's a really, really weird one for a number of reasons, obviously. But these, how do you not know the rules that your state uses? Like, there should be like a day, be like, all right, this is usually why laws take effect January 1st. So there's no confusion. Like, January 1st, we're using the new rules. And then everything after, they go, hey, you don't have to say, what set of rules are we using? Everybody's just like, oh yeah, we're using the new rules right now. It's not like, when they have daylight savings time. It's, these athletic, it's like, being Indiana and daylight savings time. Like, somebody's like, I don't know what time, what are we using right now? We're using daylight savings time? We're not using daylight savings time. Is somebody straining to make his dumb analogy fit? Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Sources said a commission official mistakenly informed UFC Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, Mark Ratner, in an email prior to the event that Massachusetts had not adopted the changes to the unified rules. Those changes have not been adopted in every jurisdiction, which has been an ongoing headache for promotions, fighters, and referees. However, Massachusetts has been using the new rule since January 2017, so a year, after discussions at meetings in October and November of 2016. So the referees went into UFC 220 under the impression that the new rules would be in effect, and that's what they informed early fighters during the standard rules meetings. When referees backstage heard UFC color commentator Joe Rogan say during the fight between Dustin Ortiz and Alexander Pantoja that Massachusetts had not adopted the new rules, they were confused and sought out Ratner per sources. Ratner explained that someone from the commission told him in a statement via email that their old rules were being used.
So what rules are supposed to be used?
I think the new ones.
So the... I mean, yeah, you'd think after a year you'd know which one.
It sounds like somebody emailed Ratner the wrong information. He was basing his directions to the refs and everything that it was the old rules.
Then but it should be the new. So the refs told everybody it was the old rules, and then halfway through the show said, "Oh no, we're using the new rules. Your fight just got more dangerous."
Apparently, yes.
You know, honestly, at that point. I think the responsible thing would have been to just leave it as the old rules. It'd be one thing if there was a screw up and the new rules had not been implemented in Massachusetts and somebody backstage would be like, oh shit, we're breaking the law. Like, we're going against the rules here. You guys gotta stop. But you can always, you know, have a stricter rule set within, you know, we've seen that before in California when Strikeforce didn't use elbows and things like that. And there would be zero harm to just having a more conservative set of rules out there. But instead, this, yeah, hey, I remember you had no time to prepare for this. Well, you're going to get punted in the fucking skull.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm just reading some more of these stories from this event. It's like, it sounds like a backyard wrestling show. Tyson Chartier, who manages and coaches Rob Font and Cater, said Font was originally told by ref Herb Dean that his fight with Thomas Almeida would be administered under the new rules. About 15 minutes later, McDonald told Chartier and Font that things had changed and the old rules would be used for the fight. John Falante, who fought Francis Amara Barroso on the main card, said he was told the old rules would be used. Alexander Pantoja, who fought Dustin Ortiz on the prelim, said his referee told him it was the new rules. It's crazy.
Okay. I at least hope that everybody in every fight was on the same set of rules.
Yeah, you would hope. Yeah. That's the most important thing, I guess.
I don't know. I assume it's common knowledge, but like, you know, not everybody has their own locker room backstage. A lot of these guys have to warm up in the same locker rooms. Can you imagine? You're in a locker room. You hear like the guy next to you is getting ready and they go, you're using the new rules. Then your ref comes out, you're using the old rules. You gotta be like, oh, wait a second here. I think somebody's fucking with us. Like, also, let's just admit it. This has gotta be some sort of gambling thing, some mob deal, like trying to fix things.
Did you hear that another UFC fighter is going to be a mum soon?
Maybe? No.
UFC women's featherweight champion Christiane Justino Cyborg is planning to adopt an 11-year-old girl.
Oh, well, okay. That sentence went from what? Okay.
Yeah, apparently she's going to be a mum. Another misleading headline. UFC champ Chris Cyborg is about to become a mum, is the headline.
I mean, bless her for doing it, I guess.
Yes. No, so, my complaint is more these headlines.
No, I know. But, like, again, I think, you know, actually adopting an 11-year-old is a hell of a thing. Like, the older kids get... It's like old dogs. Nobody wants them. They're kind of used. Everybody wants somebody brand new. But there's something weird about, like, I assume Cyborg's like a single woman, a divorced steroid using cage fighter adopting an 11-year-old. Like, this sounds like the plot of a movie. Like, is she gonna, isn't this what Batman does with kids? Like, he just brings them in. She's gonna train this kid to be her fighting protege or something. That's what it feels like. Or it's a Woody Allen situation.
Cyborg said it's a relationship between her and I. a promise I've made 7 years ago. We have a mother and daughter relationship. We were always together. When I moved to fight in the U.S., it was hard for both of us, and I promised that I would organize my life and bring her, and the time has come to fulfill my promise. Cyborg refers to her as her niece, but niece is in quotation marks. So sure, I don't know the story, what the story is with this girl.
Maybe there's some, you know, real reason behind it. It does sound kind of, I don't know. I feel like if you're single, you shouldn't adopt children. It's just, it feels like the step that a woman would take when the cats just aren't enough. But she's a cage fighter. I think she's still like in her 20s or something. If she shouldn't be, like, she's not at the age where somebody goes, well, I'm getting kind of old. I would really like to have a family now. She's like at the age where she thinks, I'm going to be a cage fighter for a living. But again, it's probably some family friend or some kid she met in an orphanage. And she's like,
in the favelas.
Yeah, and like, this is probably like Cyborg being an idiot and not understanding that when you make a promise, like a real poor kid, it's okay to not keep the promise. Like when you're like trying, if you're doing like a public appearance, like, hey, would you want to hit the home run for me? Like, if you don't hit the home run, you don't sit around there and adopt them 7 years later.
Yeah, I've never done that. In other female MMA news, this is a very
womanly-based
show. Your girl, Paige VanZant, has gotten engaged. I'm guessing you're a little downtrodden, depressed, heartbroken.
When you sent me this and I saw it, I actually didn't have much of a reaction to it.
No.
I have no idea what her personal life is like. I don't know how old she is. She's 23, 24. Like, mm-hmm. It's a little young, but like, it's close enough to an age when, you know, normal, regular people do get married then. Like, she's not 18 and you're going, oh boy, somebody's real. Oh, you and Aaron Pico, huh? But, I mean, I don't know, I have no clue what her private life is like. I hope this just keeps her out of the spotlight. I hope she has to take some time and gets knocked up. Oh, no, a pregnant Paige VanZant is going to be the most amazing and annoying social media presence there's ever been.
So some backstory here, because I know you want all the details. VanZant posted a picture back in December of 2017 that she was excited to spend her first Christmas with her boyfriend, Austin Vanderford. A month later, VanZant broke the news that she had gotten engaged. There was a picture of her and the guy on his knee proposing, and the caption said, "I said yes!" Double exclamation point. Vanderford is a member of VanZant's new Gracie Barra Portland training camp. Baja, ours. He was a two-time NAIA All-American wrestler for Southern Oregon University. Currently, he is 4-0 and is a welterweight, having made his debut in early 2017.
He's a welterweight? I saw that photo, and he just looked like a huge human being. And he realized, nah, she's just probably really small.
Yeah, she's like 5'2", 5'3", probably.
The first Christmas they've spent together, I mean, it's not like they've been engaged. They were dating for that long.
It seems like, yes, I would call this a whirlwind romance.
I'm sure nothing bad will come about this. She makes good life decisions. She's not the sort that would get into things all starry-eyed because she's never had any real-world experience and things always go well.
She is unique. I will give her that.
He's going to beat her.
That's
a horrible thing to
that's
say.
Positive. Yeah.
As soon as I said that, I go, you know what? Actually, I meant that in a funny way. It felt a little real.
Yeah. Domestic abuse jokes always go over well.
If only it was a joke.
What's that?
Nothing.
Okay. I honestly didn't hear you. PFL has signed a distribution deal with, if you know what PFL is, let's start
every time,
there.
Every time you say it, I just think it reminds me, I feel like there's gonna be like teams of fighters coming out.
Oh, like IFL?
Yeah.
Yeah. PFL is the former World Series of Fighting, which is now the Professional Fighters League. It signed distribution deals with NBC Sports and Facebook. The company obviously had a real quiet 2017. I think they only ran three shows, and one of them was like just online. Nobody watched it. Their press release for this is interesting. It says, this will allow PFL events to reach approximately 300 million MMA fans worldwide via their television and various streaming devices. I don't think there's 300 million MMA fans in the world.
If there were, they'll reach them. Damn it.
Like, where did they get approximately 300 million MMA fans?
Oh, it's just because that's the reach of the total reach of what their stations are.
If they're on Facebook, that there's 2 billion Facebook users.
No, but I'm presuming that they're on NBC Sports, which has, you know, whatever cable is 100 million, and then some deals and fucking around the world where, like, in theory, 300 million people could all watch them, and they're assume they're all fight fans.
I think they're basing that off Facebook. But it makes no sense. If there's 2 billion Facebook users, 300 million of them aren't MMA fans.
Look, this is the same company that rebranded itself in a far more unattractive and unappealing way. Like, World Series of Fighting, I liked the shows. I thought they were, you know, they had a nice presentation. They were in Vegas. They kind of, they had a feel to them. Then all of a sudden they're the professional fighters, the PFL. It just sounds dumb. Like, they really sound like they're a lesser promotion in my eyes.
You like the tournament idea, though. You like tournaments.
I am a fan of, yeah, I like tournaments. And not like an MMA fan likes tournaments, that old school bullshit. I just think tournaments are a good way to build momentum. Unless you're Strikeforce. I think the reason I liked when Bellator did it is because they had so many tournaments running that the ones that got screwed up, you didn't really notice. And there was enough successful tournaments. It's not like it, you know, Strikeforce is a legendary fuck up, and there's no way the Bellator one goes off without a hitch.
For 2018, the promotion is promising that they will introduce their previously promised major mixed martial arts league format that will include a regular season starting on June 7th, followed by playoffs and a championship round that will conclude on December 31st. Season one is set to feature 72 athletes divided in six different weight classes, all competing for a title and a $1 million prize. The playoffs will start in October and feature a winner-go-home elimination format, culminating with six championship bouts on New Year's Eve. Events will air Thursdays on NBC Sports, NBCSports.com, NBC Sports app, as well as on Facebook Watch.
I think we could eliminate most of them from being on NBC Sports and just focus on the other means of communication a little more. These people have managed to take a tournament concept and actually fuck it up. Because I know what it's going to be. It's going to be one fight. If you win your fight, then you're in the playoffs. And if you win your fight, then you're in the championship. Which I would rather them just say, you're having three fights in an 8-man tournament like that. Like, that would just be easier for me to follow. Don't pretend like you have a regular season and then you have playoffs. Playoffs should be something, first of all, playoffs should not be twice as long as your regular season. And that's stupid.
I understand what you're saying. So, PFL is off to an auspicious start here. Changing gears, we had some fight announcements. Last week it was, I think we were talking about the potential of this fight happening, Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier. It's official, it's going to happen at UFC 206 in July. It was quick how this fight got signed and was ready to go. It was almost immediately, less than a week after their fights at UFC 220. So, a fairly big fight there, obviously the biggest fight of Miocic's career. And Cormier will be going for the heavyweight title, could be a two-division champion, would be a big deal for him as well. Again, he's planned to retire in March, by March of 2019 when he turns 40. Will be interesting. I personally don't like Cormier's chances. I mean, he might be able to grind away on Miocic and get him tired, but I don't like the reach. I don't like the strength, the wrestling advantage that Cormier has a lot of the time. I don't know if he's going to have it against Miocic. He's so much bigger. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that fight? Were you surprised they made it that quick?
Yeah, just because usually these things get rumored for a while and whatever. Although it's possible that because they're also going to be coaching the Ultimate Fighter, because that show needs to keep going on the fucking air, that's why they had to get it done so fast. And maybe a lot of these fights do get made quicker than we know, but they don't announce them right away. But, you know, it's a good fight. It's good to see when something makes sense and somebody just does it. They didn't overthink it. Just, yeah, these two guys are undefeated, dominant champions. They got no one to face because look who we're just trotting out for them to fight. Let's have them go at each other. This is a great main event for your biggest show of the year. It's a real super fight. It's not a made up super fight like they're trying to do everywhere else. This one really feels like, yeah, this is something special. And particularly for Cormier, like, this is it, man. Like, if he wins this fight, I think he will be able to fairly say that he truly accomplished a huge deal in his career. Like, this would be, to me, as big as winning a real, well, it would be winning a real championship, but this would be your gold medal type of thing where he could look back at his career and go, yeah, I did it. I was the greatest there was. And right now he's got the looming shadow of a cocaine dust cloud hovering overhead. And for Miocic, maybe he could just shut the fuck up about Dana not liking him now and not wanting to promote him. It's pretty good. Dana White treats you pretty, I mean, this is how Dana White treats people that he hates. Explains why he actually does treat people he hates pretty well, doesn't he? Tito made a lot of money. Ken made a lot of money. Meanwhile, I have been a loyal servant of the UFC, a shill. He didn't give me shit. Actually, I get free tickets, but other than that, I didn't get shit.
Yeah. If Cormier wins this fight, can you put him in the mix for greatest of all time?
No.
Those Jones fights still hang over his head, even though Jones is a known steroid cheat.
Oh, the greatest of all time as far as light heavyweight goes?
I'm saying one of the greatest fighters ever. Undefeated at heavyweight, goes in and beats probably the greatest heavyweight ever. You know, I
think you would be in the mix. You could like talk about him, but I would not put him near the. I would not put him near the category of Dick Anderson and GSP and Mighty Mouse
because of those Jones losses.
Yeah, because those guys all had real prolonged one after another title runs and title defenses and all that stuff. And Cormier's had two title defenses.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just think if when we talk GSP and Anderson and I mean the only one you can't say really has any losses is Jones, but
Mighty Mouse has won at bantamweight, but
yeah, versus Cruz, yeah.
And that's the problem with it's like honestly Cormier's he's kind of like the baseball players where it's like yeah, we can all say that Barry Bonds cheated. And he didn't really earn, you know, he got an advantage here, but we all also watched it happen and we all just went, yeah, no, he was really fucking great. It's the same with John Jones. Like all of his fuck ups aside, we all know, like, I don't know if we know, but like in our heart, like we've seen it and be like, yeah, no, he just beat the shit out of you, Cormier, twice. He beat you up in a fight. That's a real tough thing for people to forget.
I agree. I'm just saying on his record, he's got the one loss to Jones and the other is considered a no contest now. And I know it's hard to get those images out of your head because Jones did it to him twice, beat him twice. But at the same time, it's like GSP had a couple loss. He got knocked out by Matt Serra. Nobody really holds that against him. It's considered like a fluke.
You're right. But with Jones, it's not a fluke. I think that's the problem. And right. Again, this is not to take anything away from Cormier. He really is up there as far, you know, if he beats Miocic, and I always like to see how the fights play out because I'm a big believer that how you think something will like kind of come across changes dramatically in MMA once you actually see the fight happen. Like, you know, it's not just enough to win. Sometimes, you know, if he was to go out there and just ragdoll him and toss him around and make him look like a bitch and just wipe the floor with him, as opposed to maybe grinding out a five-round narrow victory, my tone's going to change there, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, the one Cormier fight that, like, he blew me away, and granted, like, Dan Henderson was old and not that good at the time, just what he did to Dan Henderson in that fight It's freaking crazy. Like that was like nobody's ever thrown Dan Henderson around like that ever in his career, you know?
That was scary in the same way like the Ozdemir fight where you just watch him going, you're going, oh, you're just a way different class right now.
Right. Which speaks of Jones too. Who do you like in that fight? Like I think Miocic's gonna light him up personally. I think he's too big and too quick and I think Cormier is a small light heavyweight. Like I know he has trouble making weight, but he's gonna have a major reach disadvantage and I know he's got that Olympic level wrestling, but he's also 39 years old and Miocic can wrestle, man.
I mean, when you got a fight between the guy, like Cormier's fighting a guy who's bigger than him, maybe faster than him, younger than him, stronger than him, he's taking less damage than he has. He's fighting, you know, heavier. He's got every single advantage goes towards Miocic, like every one of them. But I will say that Cormier is an amazing fighter and, you know, let's face it, he gave John Jones by far the toughest test, especially early on, like, he's a competitor, and there's something, I hate that kind of metaphysical bullshit, but there is something to a guy like Cormier just knows how to compete and win at a level that Miocic will never understand, but it's still, you know, the big dude fight. Also, you know, Cormier does have an advantage in that he knows what it's like to be the smaller, lighter guy in there with a heavyweight, and so he's faced the challenge of a big guy, whereas Miocic has never really faced somebody where he goes, okay, this guy has a unique set of skills that I've not encountered before inside of the cage.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too because, I mean, Cormier fights obviously at light heavyweight at 205, but a lot of those guys he's fighting are 225 in the cage. Miocic will probably be 235. It's not going to be that big of a difference, but I still feel, there's no way Miocic can make 205 though. You know what I mean? There's a difference there, but I don't know.
He's a different weight class. He just is truly a different sized human being. And it's not just about the weight on the scale always. It's just being bigger.
Yeah. He's used to moving bigger dudes around too.
Yeah.
A bunch of upcoming fights were announced this week.
Although I do want to say real quick to just kind of belabor the point and carry this on and never let it go. We have seen a lot in the past 3 or 4 years. The guys moving up in weight have a lot of success. Like MMA seemed to, there's a sea change happening with all that stuff, it seems. So, yeah, I will now say Cormier wins.
Okay. Upcoming fights, tell me what you think of them. Gaethje versus Poirier, UFC on Fox, April 14th, main event.
Amazing.
Good. Carlos Condit versus Matt Brown.
Amazing.
Also on that card.
Although potentially sad. Potentially very sad.
Someone should probably retire after that fight. Probably the loser. Anthony Pettis versus Michael Chiesa, UFC 223 on April 7th.
Kinda hilarious that this is what Pettis' career's at.
You always shit on Chiesa, I feel like.
It's Michael Chiesa, and this is Anthony Pettis, a dude that was on the Wheaties box.
Fair. Yeah, Pettis is on a skid, man. I think, what's he lost, 4 or 5 or something
37
like that?
In a row, I think. I don't know. He's lost bad. Like, he had the one win over Jim Miller. But otherwise, you know, he's getting blown out in these fights and just made look like a bitch. That's right, Pettis, you're a bitch.
Yeah, that's good. And then we've also got Rajan Al Iaquinta versus Paul Felder.
Oh, well, anything with Paul Felder.
I'm not Rajan Al.
I love Paul Felder's my boy. Rajan Al doesn't do great commentary. He tries to sell me a fucking house.
That's pretty good. I don't think Paul Felder's ever told the crowd to go fuck themselves on the mic.
Also, Felder has responded and interacted with me in a way that tells me he's kind of smart. Whereas with Rajan Al, when Brian Stan became a fucking realtor and I made some tweet at him, I think he responded as like it was serious. Like, I don't think he understood that I was mocking him and pointing out there's another fighter selling houses. He was just like, oh, your buddy wants to sell houses? Well, here's the tip. Like, okay, dumbass.
he He was having contract issues. That's why he hasn't fought that often. He feels like he's not getting paid enough. So he
the surest way to ensure that you get more money is to just not get any money at all by doing nothing.
Well, he's claiming they ripped up my old contract and gave me a new contract for this last fight, and they gave me a new contract for this fight. I asked for 80 to show and 50 to win. I said 80,000, I will go in there and I will fight Paul Felder and I don't give a shit what happens. I never think about when I fought Diego Sanchez, and it's crazy to say, but it was 26,000. That's in my head and anything else is extra.
That's poor negotiating. Don't tell everybody, hey, I made 26 grand once and that was fucking awesome. Anything I get more than that, that's just gravy. That's not a way to negotiate your contract.
The judges, there's nothing guaranteed. Show and win money is insane that they do that. You are putting your win bonus money in the judge's hands. I said, give me 80,000 and my bonus, if I win, I get the bonus of 50,000. So that's how I came to the number, and that's why we are where we are. So apparently he's happy with his money. I don't really get his logic.
So
but,
I think he's saying, like, it sounds like they probably offered him like 60-60 or something. 65-65, he goes, what about 80-50?
Right.
But I understand why guys, the win bonus thing doesn't always look good, and but it's really, it's a question of your perspective. You could look at it as all you would ever get is your show money, and we're giving you a win bonus on top of that. Or, and I think a lot of guys see this, and they might be right, people look at it as they're trying to cut my pay in half if I'm not good enough. And so kind of your viewpoint, but that's just the nature of the sport, and that's just how it's, that's how prize fighting's been forever. It's not like this is a new development where all of a sudden WMEI came in and bought the company and everybody went, all right, guys, you're going to have to earn your money now. No freebies.
Would you like to hear his thoughts on fighting Khabib?
Oh, that would be great.
I can guarantee you Conor is not coming back to fight Khabib. Guaranteed, and I don't blame him. I wouldn't either. You'd have to pay me $1 million right now to fight that fucking guy. I don't want to fight that fucking guy. Did you see what happened to Barboza? Are you fucking nuts? You want me to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov? He added. You have to pay me to fight that guy. Now, if you paid me, I'd go in there and freaking fight him. But Barboza got paid 70, whatever he got paid. Get the fuck out of here. That's silly. You're nuts. The guy is like, I don't know.
Okay, I love him now. Al Iaquinta is officially my favorite fighter ever. I've never heard a fighter so honest of, what are you out of your fucking mind? Have you seen what that guy does in there? Oh, what are you, crazy? None of this bravado, hey, I'll fight anybody at any time. I'm a manly man. It's more like, no, just, did you see what he did? Did you see what he did to that guy? You're not supposed to admit that, Al. Because now if you fight each other, Khabib's going to be looking at you going, well, you've quit already. I know I got this one in the bag. Also, nothing Dana likes more than guys who are out there saying, I want a lot of money to fight. I'm not going to fight that guy. It's scary.
Unless you give me a lot more money.
Yeah. Although, he is right. I wouldn't. I think you should probably try to get as much money as you fucking can if you're going to fight Khabib.
Yeah, he may never fight again. In other fight news, Don, UFC, we've got Nick Newell, the man with only one and a half arms, versus Sonny Luque at LFA 35 on March 9th. I believe Newell's last fight was against Justin Gaethje, and he got destroyed and hasn't fought since.
See what Gaethje's gone on to really accomplish? Do you go, yeah, that's a real bad idea. They had the one-armed man fight that psycho. They had one-armed man fight the one guy that, what's his face? A golden snitch from, USADA there, Nowitzki said, yeah. Every single fighter I've ever seen has shown a little fear at one time or another, except for that crazy son of a bitch. I've never seen someone happier to be in a cage. Yeah, we put that guy in there with a one-armed man. And then we renamed ourselves the PFA.
L.
Do whatever.
Nick Newell's a weird one because he won a bunch of fights. I mean, yeah, granted, it was against no-name guys, and he would kick the shit out of most normal human beings, but should he be in a cage professionally fighting dudes, like with like half of his forearm missing? Like, I've never really understood like how he gets sanctioned, how that's even allowed.
I mean, I think the fact that he has won a number of fights against legitimate fighters speaks on his behalf. And there is something, like, I mean, the libertarian in me says, hey, he's a grown man. He knows what he's doing. Have at it. But I'm kind of with you in that there's just that feeling of...
You're fighting somebody with a major handicap.
Yeah,
like,
it's probably ableist of me, and I'm guessing there's probably like handicapped people out there who probably legitimately do look at a guy like that and be like, that's amazing. But like, I have the same thing. It's like, I don't know, you're crippled. Like, you're broken. You're not supposed to be in a fucking cage fight. Hasn't life done enough to you? You want to get in a cage fight? The Lord took your arm from you.
His story is truly amazing. Like, the fights he won, like, he even hung in there with Gaethje for a little bit. Like, he could fight. Like, it was impressive. Like, I remember him watching on some of his fights on, like, those Friday night cards on Axis. It might have even been, like, HDTV back then, whatever it was. But I was like, wow, this guy could be a big star. But it's like, at a certain point when he fights real guys, he's going to get fucked up because... You can't defend yourself to a certain degree.
Yeah,
you're going to get drilled in the head.
And it's kind of like, what's his face? There's Zach Gowen. Where,
right.
I know that it was fake and he wanted to do it and he loved it, but it felt more tragic when he inevitably became just this burned out druggie. And you're like, god damn. The problem is that obviously he really wanted, like both Newell and, dickhead there, Gowen, really want to do this, and it would be kind of wrong to deny them a legitimate chance of their dream. When, by all accounts, again, they actually proved themselves credible at it.
Right.
But it feels extra exploitative to be pimping out cripples. Like, this is P.T. Barnum shit, man. Like, I know they can do it, but if some guy had, like, you know, some deformed head, and he still wanted to fight, and he was good at fighting, I'd be like, but we're only watching it because we want to see what happens. Like,
well, you think about all the stuff the fighters have to go through to get licensed now, whether it's brain scans or blood tests or MRIs or whatever they're doing. Like, Rashad Evans couldn't fight for months because there was something abnormal with his brain. It's the same thing with Thiago Alves. And they put you through a litany of tests, and you think one of them would be having all your limbs.
Well, it's got to be kind of awkward when they do, like, one of the most basic neurological tests, touch your nose with each one of your hands, and you can't do it.
Also announced this week is Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin 2. That's going to be on May 5th, site to be determined. I'm presuming it's somewhere in Las Vegas.
Oh, sorry. I'm flipping on TV right now, and the family, those poor people that were, like, this front and center of their kid was killed by an illegal immigrant on Fox, and they're like this nice little couple, and they got these t-shirts on with their kid's face, like, you know, we miss, it says like, I will miss you, and I know that, you know, they do this shit, but the kid looks like Rick James from the Dave Chappelle skit. I can't see anything but that. I'm just like, this looks so weird.
You could still miss that person. The Canelo-Golovkin fight, that ended in a draw, the first one, kind of controversial. I think most people thought Golovkin won, if memory serves me.
That's right, it was a draw.
Yeah, so they're running it back.
Yeah, good for them.
Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, it's the two biggest stars in boxing, I think. Yeah, you're going at it. The first fight was a good fight, actually, from what I remember. Mm-hmm. It wasn't your boring thing. It ended in a draw, so it was kind of funny. I hope this one ends in a draw also. And I'll say that, I think Canelo will win this one.
You do?
Just on the fact that time is on his side.
I got you. I'm with you. Last one did 1.3 million buys. I'll be curious to see if, that many people buy it again.
But how many does it do worldwide? Because Dana reminds us that's what's really important.
Oh, 8.7 million. It's huge.
Except for what they don't tell you is that they're counting every single house in India that gets it on cable, but because like that month they raised their rates by a nickel, it counts as a buy. That's a great fucking gimmick. That would be an amazing gimmick. WWE should be claiming that they have like 5 million pay-per-view buys every week because everybody has to buy USA Network Extra Special.
Tell me what happened 3 years ago today.
Okay. Ooh, that's going to be a tough one for me. Cause like I finalized my divorce like 3 years ago this month.
Oh, congrats.
2015. Yeah.
How long were you married for total?
Okay. Legally, I was married for like what?
No, illegally. How long were you married?
Well, undocumentedly. September 2013, and the divorce was finalized in January 2015, but she left me in July 2014, and that's kind of when I really say that began.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a winner. I'm a real fucking winner, man.
Do you mean, alright, we don't need to delve
too deep. Anyways, 2015, let's see, that would be after Connor had already been big at that point, so, no it wouldn't. That was Connor in Boston.
No.
Damn it.
I mean, it might have been around that time, but not. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I don't know then.
You do know.
I'm sure I know, but I don't recall off the top of my head.
Oh, you could. It was UFC 183. Anderson Silva versus Nick Diaz.
Oh, Nicky boy laying down in a weird fucking fight, man. When he somehow lasted 5 rounds while being high. Think about it, a fight where he got a longer suspension for weed than Anderson did for steroids.
Can you believe that? Like, looking back on it, how stupid that is.
And Nick still hasn't fought.
First of all, that fight never even should have really happened, considering, like, Nick doesn't fight at 185. Anderson hadn't fought in a while. His leg had been broken. Like, he wasn't the same guy anymore. Diaz had been off, like, a couple years since, I think, like, the GSP fight. He hadn't fought since then. So they both come back, and then they both end up failing drug tests around this fight. And the fight ends up being called a no contest when it's all said and done. The fight did 13,000 in attendance at MGM Grand. This was January 31st, 2015. $4.5 million gate and 650,000 buys on pay-per-view.
Jeez, that's a success, man.
Yeah. Anderson failed a pre-fight test administered by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. This might have been pre-USADA even.
It was. USADA happened in summer of 2015.
Right. So the results came in on the day of the announcement and revealed Silva tested positive for drostanolone metabolites, which is an anabolic steroid.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It is okay. An important component of dick pills.
Silva also had traces of androsterone, a form of endogenous testosterone, and also another banned substance. Silva was also tested on January 19th on the night of the event. Further testing was expected to be conducted by the commission to confirm these preliminary results.
This was like the height of the pre-USADA fuck-ups with Nevada, because that was right after Jones had tested positive for shit. Like cocaine and for like the weirdly low testosterone levels, and everybody's like, nah, we just let it happen. And then they told us after the fact.
Then Nick had an amount of marijuana metabolites over the allowable limit in his post-fight test. This was the third time that Diaz had tested positive for marijuana.
You know, it's funny. You look at Diaz and his history of fuck-ups, and you can say that this man has failed 3 drug tests and has a whereabouts failure. Yet, in totality, we look at it, it's just Nick Diaz, he's an idiot. It doesn't really hurt, like, he's not really violating anything. Yet, in any other sport, if you'd failed 3 drug tests like that and didn't give me your whereabouts, you'd be suspended for life. Like, and nobody would even have a problem with that. Or maybe not for life, but people just look at you and be like, oh yeah, you're Johnny Football there. You're just a fuck up. You don't get to do it anymore. You gotta be a professional. And yet with Nick, we're all like, oh, come on, let it go. It's Nick. What's it really hurt? And he just wandered off in the woods for a while. He does that. You know how he gets.
So then Anderson's pre-fight test was positive for drostanolone and whatever else, I forget, androsterone. But his post-fight test was positive for oaxapam and temazepam. Those medications are used to treat anxiety and insomnia.
And they use different, they'd use different labs. One of them was, one of them used WADA and one of them used, Quest.
Right.
Cause they're winners.
Well, it's funny too, because he must have been all stressed out from taking the steroids. So he had to take a bunch of anti-anxiety pills.
No.
And he couldn't sleep.
The man's dick doesn't work. That would cause stress and anxiety in anybody. He's up all night worried. My dick doesn't work. What's going on?
Or maybe he took the dick pills and he couldn't sleep at night cause he was sore wrecked all evening.
There we go. And then he made that as an excuse, and they all were like, oh yeah, we believe you. You get 1 year. One fucking year he's suspended for that. Nick Diaz still hasn't fought.
Well,
fucking years. Nick hasn't fought in 3 years from this shit. Even when that fucking psycho wanted to give him like 5 years or some shit, he'd be over halfway done with it by now. You'd get out of jail for a time and a half for good behavior like that.
Well, I think Diaz's problem is he still hasn't paid off the fine or whatever.
Oh, I know.
I think he still owes him like $100,000.
This could easily be cleared up if Nick wasn't Nick.
Right.
Meanwhile, his brother's smoking CBD, so to speak, so apparently, after fucking shows and flaunting in front of everybody's face, and then he gets a rule named after him, and he's proud of it.
Times change.
Diaz rule, you're allowed to smoke weed.
The world gets better as time goes on. I'm a firm believer of that. You also had a result of this, that awesome, hearing where Silva was there and Ed Suarez is there. And they're talking about how Anderson Silva got like a clear vial of blue liquid from a friend who went to Thailand and he drank it. And that's what caused the failure. Like, it was just so pathetic. And
yet John Jones used the exact same excuse, apparently with the credibility.
It'd be awesome if Jones had to be trotted out, though, and you get to see these air live. Remember they were airing them on Fight Pass?
Yeah,
like,
that was great.
It was like
I
a draw to Fight Pass.
Oh, I remember.
NSAC hearings.
Half Guard actually got a lot of, not a lot, but got a decent buzz on those things because I was, you know, a lawyer talking about these high profile legal fuck ups, and we would air all the things. It was great. They had that fucking annoying, horrible, just evil, shrill bitch who was like looking at Nick and be like, I think you should never fight again. And like all the other commissioners were kind of giving this look like, the fuck you talking? Like, lady, you're out of your fucking mind here. But nobody wanted to say anything. And then, yeah, Anderson's entire farce where suddenly he didn't speak English.
Was that her name? Pat Lundahl?
Pat Lundahl. Lundahl. Yeah. Lunger? He's
Lundgren.
Lundgren. Yeah. Dolph Lundgren was showing up there. And, you know, that son of a bitch, even though he's got a master's degree in, like, astrophysics or something.
Also on that card, we had Tyron Woodley beating Kelvin Gastelum, Rage and Ally Quinta defeating Joe Lozon, Talis Latis defeating Tim Bosch, and Tiago Alves defeating Jordan Meehan. Decent card.
Yeah, and yet at the time, I'm sure it was just kind of like, oh, really? Like Kelvin Gastelum and Tyron Woodley? In fact, I guarantee I probably looked at that and went, oh, yeah, those two. I can't wait to see that shit.
It was a catchweight fight at 180 pounds.
After Kelvin missed weight, and that's when Tyrone didn't take the money from him.
Idiot.
Because he's a nice guy. He's like, I always like to be young and hungry.
In the prelims, Misha Tate beat Sarah McMahon. Derek Brunson beat Ed Herman. John Lineker fought at 130 pounds, defeating Ian McCall. And that was
that Ian McCall's last fight?
No, he... Remember he cut his head on the ropes in Ryzen recently?
Oh, okay, but before that, was that his last fight? I think it might be his last fight.
Yes. 2015.
Poor bastard. I mean, what is wrong with his career? It's the Dana White thing from before. Certain people just have weird shit happen to them. Of course the sexual assault happened in Dana White's house. Of course Ian McCall is the kind of guy that makes his return to cage fighting after 3 years and gets his head cut open on ropes.
I think he's dating Ryan Shamrock. Remember her? Like, that's Ken Shamrock's sister or something in WWE?
The short-lived, and then she kind of was just actually boning her, I think, and then she just kind of went away, and that's a weird couple. That's surprising.
I think she was dating X-Pac for a while, too. There were some weird stories with them when he was wrestling in Mexico.
I know everybody makes mistakes in life, but honest to goodness, if I was dating a girl and I found out that she had dated X-Pac, I would immediately just say, nope, we're done. I'd walk away and delete her number forever.
Have you heard the story about X-Pac tearing his butthole open when he missed the Bronco Buster?
Yeah.
It's rough.
It's not even just some of that's just because of the disease he's got to be carrying. Like, he's definitely the incubator for super AIDS. But also just, any woman that would be with him, there's something wrong with you. Like, on a real deep, disturbing level, you are not right in the head if you're dating X-Pac.
Why is there shit in my purse?
Hey, why do you have pictures of this dude with this chick with a dick all over the place?
I didn't know you were in a movie. You went to China?
Oh my gosh, what have I seen? Oh, on the other hand, you are a grown man who is famous for rubbing your dick in other men's faces against their will, so.
He had a good run. Speaking of good runs, Roy Jones Jr. is coming to her, and he is having his retirement fight next weekend, on February 8th. Reason I bring this up is it's going to be on Fight Pass, of all places.
February 8th is a Thursday.
Is it?
I think so. I'm pretty sure the 7th is a Wednesday, because I've seen a comedian. My birthday is the 11th, and I remember my birthday is going to be on the weekend for once.
All right, so this is a midweek fight, if I'm reading here is correct. Hey, so he's fighting a guy named Scott Sigmund in Pensacola, which is Jones's hometown. Jones says this is going to be his last fight. Unless
Anderson wants to fight.
Unless he can get Anderson Silva. He says, of course I would come back, because it's not a fight, it's an event. And events always interest me. It's a huge event that interests both of us. So the only way he's coming out of retirement is to box Anderson Silva.
Hey, you got to like a guy that goes out on a high note fighting on a Thursday in the UFC Fight Pass in Pensacola, Florida. That's how all great careers come to a distinguished end. Yeah, actually, you know, for a long time, I was like, I don't really want to see them. I definitely want to see those two box now. I'm all about the spectacle. We live in an era of just, let's see crazy shit on TV. Go.
Roy Jones Jr. is one of those sad ones. Like, kind of like Anderson, actually. It's like, they should have just retired. You know what I mean? And they kept going and they kept making money, and you can't tell guys when to go away. But it's like now I think Roy Jones Jr., I don't remember how awesome he was. I just picture him getting knocked out and a lot of losses in the last few years of his career. And you're going to remember him for hanging around too long and not the awesome, you know, guy who went up, you know, 8 different weight classes and won the light heavyweight title and was undefeated for 34 fights and 49-1. You know, you won't remember that. You're going to remember the old guy who, I think he fought on that UR fight show. Like, he fought some guy from the crowd or something.
The guy that won a contest to fight him.
Yeah. It's like, that's what I'm going to remember, but maybe he's a jerk.
He's like from an episode of The Simpsons where Homer wins a chance to fight the champ or something like that. Like, that's what he was at. And we always look at the champ as being pathetic in that situation. And, you know, the parallels to him and Anderson are pretty good, because they also both were not draws at all for the majority of their career. And it's only near the end when they kind of got a little bit of recognition, but they never made the money that they probably should have given their talent.
Yeah. I mean, I remember him fighting somebody like John Ruiz, I think. Like, he won a heavyweight title.
Yep, and then then after the Ruiz fight was the first loss. He got knocked out, like, in the ninth. I think that was when he got knocked out. And he had the two
Tarver.
Tarver. And one of them, I think, was, like, the ninth round. One of them was, like, in the third round or something. And in both cases, you're just like, oh, yeah, now Jones is he's done. You knew right then and there he was done.
Yeah.
And that was like a decade ago when he's still fighting.
Right. I mean, the first Tarver loss was 2004.
Yeah.
14 years ago.
I was in college.
I was not. I was done with college. Not that you asked what I was doing at that time.
I didn't care at all, to be honest.
We know. You're a little self-absorbed. Also,
I can't really argue.
This weekend, I shouldn't say also because apparently the Jones Jr. fight's on a Thursday. We've got UFC Belem. Belem? Bulimia? I don't know. It's February 3rd at Arena Guillerme Parense. Don't know much about Belem. Apparently it's in Northeast Brazil. Belem?
It's Belem, Brazil, yeah.
There's a lot of fighters from that area.
Okay. This is the first visit to Para in the country's northern region. This show is headlined by Lyoto Machida versus Eric Anders.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see. I have never heard of Eric Anders. I have no clue. And this is like one of those things where I'm like, has that guy been around for a while? Or I kind of recognize that name. I have never heard of this man ever. And somehow he's fighting Machida in his return from cheating.
I can tell you a little bit. Let me...
Is he Norwegian? It sounds Norwegian.
Let me learn you something. He is 30 years old from Birmingham, Alabama. He goes by the nickname Ya Boy.
Oh my gosh, he's now my new favorite fighter ever.
I thought Ally Quinta was your new favorite fighter.
Ally Quinta doesn't have a nickname Ya Boy from Birmingham, Alabama.
Anders was born on an American Air Force base in the Philippines where his mother was stationed at the time. When Anders was a sophomore in high school, he moved to San Antonio, Texas, where he played football for Smithson Valley High. After graduating, Anders started at the University of Alabama in 2006. From 06 to 09, Anders played for the Crimson Tide as a linebacker, starting 14 games in his senior season. His career at Alabama culminated with a victory in the 09 BCS Championship against the Texas Longhorns, a game in which he led the Crimson Tide with 7 tackles and a forced fumble. After college, he signed a free agent contract with the Cleveland Browns. He also had stints in the Canadian Football League and Arena Football League before beginning a career in MMA.
So he's Brendan Schaub.
Maybe.
Although Brendan Schaub was not that good a football player.
He fought in Bellator in October of 2016. He won there. He's fought in Legacy. And now he is currently 2-0 in the UFC with wins over Rafael Natal and Marcus Perez.
I have never heard of Marcus Perez either, so he's in the winner's circle there. I'm guessing he's going to be fighting Derek Brunson pretty soon.
Obviously we don't know much about this Eric Anders man. He also spells Eric E-R-Y-K.
Is he white?
I don't have a picture of him in front of me. I will do a Google search now.
It sounds like he's got like a white background. Just it feels like white trash from Alabama.
Images. Why is it called engravings on Google when you want to look at pictures? He is not white.
Huh. Son of a bitch. Oh, my entire view of him has changed.
Yeah, I'm not there. There might be mixed ethnicities.
Oh, he's not pure black though.
I can't tell.
You're not racist enough for this show. Get the fuck out of here. I don't know what he's gonna do. He's 30 years old, washed out athlete, getting into cage fighting against the.
So does that mean he can beat 40-year-old Lyoto Machida?
Yeah, because Machida's chin sucks. He's an old man who's gonna get hit and get hurt. It's mostly just me realizing Machida is just gonna have more sad fights than not sad fights going forward. So bet on the sad fight.
Machida is 1-4 in his last 5. Losses though are to Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold, Yoel Romero, and Derek Brunson. So good guys, but, the Brunson losses is tough.
Yeah, no, but that's how it happens. You know, you start losing all these elite guys, and then you lose one to a Derek Brunson, and the next thing you know, you're fighting Lars Anderson here.
Hans Christian Andersen. I bet no one's ever called him that. And we've also got John Dodson versus Pedro Munhoz.
So that's what Dodson's been up to. Granted, he's probably fought like 4 times last year, and I don't remember any of it. But, yeah.
Valentina Shevchenko versus Priscilla Cachoeira.
Probably for the to determine who's the best 125-pound woman on the planet.
Michelle Prezeris versus Desmond Green.
There's something about Michelle Prezeris that I just like, and that it's all, it has nothing to do with him as a person or a fighter. I just like his name.
I think he might partake in illegal substances.
He looks like a roid monkey too, doesn't he?
I think so. I think he should be fighting at 125, not 155. Then we have a heavyweight fight with Timothy. I can't afford to bring my team down to Bellum, Brazil. Johnson versus Marcelo Golm.
No way that mustache loses. That is an American mustache going across the border and getting one for Trump.
Thiago Santos versus Anthony Smith.
Anthony Smith. There's a hell of a name for you. I mean, seriously, he's probably like a white guy with a shaved head and shitty tattoos named Anthony Smith. And he sits around all day wondering, I don't know why I don't get over. Why don't people really pay attention and remember me?
On the prelims, we've got Yuri Alcantara versus Joe Soto. So that's
something. Good.
Two decent guys. And then I noticed a name opening the prelims on UFC Fight Pass. Maya Stevenson versus Pollyanna Viana. Maya Stevenson is actually the wife of Joe Big Daddy Stevenson. Fun fact.
So
we'll have another wife, husband combo. Well, I mean, obviously Joe Stevenson doesn't fight anymore, but we were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
You're going to take Joe Stevenson and bring him down to Brazil and give him some free time while his wife does whatever. There's no way he doesn't do a lot of cocaine.
Can't you do that in the United States?
Yeah, but Brazil, man, like, there's no laws down there.
What?
You can just do anything you want, man. It's Brazil.
Okay. All right. You got some time for stuff here?
Nope.
All right. See you around. Actually, I will probably never see you ever in my life. Past week, well, I mean, maybe. If you come to Cape Cod or I end up in Chicago somehow, it seems unlikely if at this point it hasn't happened, right?
No, there's a good chance I go to Cape Cod. It seems like something I would do. There's lighthouses and stuff.
There's a lot of lighthouses.
I know.
I've been to Chicago. That was a long time ago.
You ate at Alinea.
I did. Yeah.
Was it good?
It was a little weird. I fell out of place and a little awkward. Food was good. It was interesting. Situation.
I love being awkward and out of place. Because it usually makes those people feel bad, not me. We're all looking over the strip like, what the fuck is he doing here? Did he just sneeze into the cloth napkin? Really?
That's how I feel every time I go to church. All right, so this past weekend we had – not weekend. Was it weekend? Sunday. Yeah, the Grammys. Did you watch any of the Grammys? That's the music awards.
Not 1 second. Oh, no, that's not true. I did watch about 10 seconds, but that's it.
Okay, what were the 10 seconds you watched?
Hillary Reed from the fucking book.
Ah, yeah. Fire, hell, fire, and brimstone.
What is wrong with that fucking woman? Just go away. Nobody wants you doing shit.
Some people might.
Yeah, it just looks so bad.
I'm not saying it's good, and I'm not a fan of hers, but still millions of people voted for her. I know you don't like her, but...
But, like you're supposed to... She's a higher profile and doing shit than Obama. And everyone likes Obama.
I'm not... I think she looks kind of petty doing it. Like, I get it. But I'm guessing her fans probably liked it and laughed at it. I don't know.
I mean, how many times can Lena Dunham possibly tune into something?
I don't know. You think she has a Nielsen box?
I don't know. There was 10 million fewer people watching the fucking Grammys this year than last year. Or maybe it may have 10 million.
Really?
It was a 10% drop.
That, it's like the NFL.
I like to think that, did we just have the Emmys also? Maybe that was the Golden Globes?
Golden Globes, yeah.
One of them had a 10% drop. My joke was that all the people are so angry about all the sex abuse in Hollywood, so everybody who was abused didn't watch this year in protest, and that's why they had a 10% drop in viewership.
Could be.
There's a lot of rapes out there, man.
I've heard.
A lot of rapes.
Here's what I think we should do. I'm gonna play you the winners and you're gonna see.
I saw the fucking nominees ahead of time.
Yeah.
I didn't know a single fucking song at all outside of I've heard that Despacito song just because when I heard there was like a billion views, I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I listen and I go, I've never heard something that has been listened to a billion times. There's a bit of a gulf happening between me and 13-year-old children, thankfully.
Well, let's see if you know any of these. This was the record of the year.
I don't even know what that means. Bruno Mars.
Yes!
I can recognize the voice.
Okay, that was called That's What I Like. Let's see, give me a second here. Talk amongst yourselves for a moment.
Yeah, I'll talk about amongst myself. These people have a album of the year and record of the year and song of the year and all these different things, and they're all like the same exact people nominated for the same exact thing, and they never really explained to me what the difference is between album and record. I finally read that I think record is, it sounds like it's more of like a technical award. It's for like the production of everything. But I'm like, well, why do we give a shit about that? Like, nobody gives a fuck about like best cinematography or whatever. Like we pretend, oh yeah, that guy won cinematography. It must be really great. But like, we don't really care. We want to know what was the best collection of music that one artist put out in about 12 to 14 songs. Who did the best version of that? And then who had the best individual song? And then just move on.
Can you tell me song and artist for best pop solo performance?
Is somebody black? If you told me it was R. Kelly, I would say yeah. Kendrick Lamar.
I don't think you could be any further off from Kendrick Lamar. Like, literally, other side of the world. Same gender. You got the gender right.
I don't even know really what that means. I don't know what side of the world Kendrick Lamar is.
He's from Compton.
Okay, then this is from what, Korea?
Go the other direction.
Europe?
Yes.
I have no fucking clue. Ed Sheeran?
Yes!
He's a European. I've heard of him. I've no idea what his music is.
Yeah.
I thought he played the guitar.
He does.
I thought he was just like a singer-songwriter type.
He is.
That sounded like a little poppy bullshit dumb person music.
Yeah, people like it. People are digging it. He sells out like football stadiums every summer.
He's probably, is he like a, I'm a sensitive man type?
Yes, I consider him like this era's like John Mayer.
I was gonna say he's got like a John Mayer, girls swoon over him, and it's gonna be revealed that he's actually kind of creepy to him.
Maybe, I think he's actually engaged at the moment.
Yeah, well, so is John Mayer.
Here we go, best pop duo group performance.
I know this song. I like this song. I would call them the Radiators. The Illuminators. Someone with an Aiders or something like that?
Portugal the Man. Feel It Still is the name of the song.
Son of a bitch. I wasn't even close.
Let's see what we can do here.
I seen the video. There's like a dude, I think he's like walking through like a forest or a jungle or something in the video at one point.
Okay. Yeah. That was like, considered like, it's not like rock, but they're a rock band. They play instruments and stuff.
Yeah, the alternative station I listened to played that song.
Mm.
When I do listen to music for 10 minutes a day.
Yeah, the radio's hard to listen to.
I'm not in the car long enough to do it. If I'm in the car for more than 10 minutes, I'm going to listen to a podcast.
I hear you. How about this one? My left stroke
just went viral. Kendrick Lamar?
Correct.
I've heard this song a little bit.
Oh, shit. He won, he cleaned up in the rap category. Best rap performance, best rap song, best rap album. All went to Kendrick Lamar.
Poor Jay-Z.
Jay-Z did not win for 444. People like that. That got well reviewed.
I know Connor loved it.
He had a couple lean years there. Anyway, that was pretty much the Grammys. I don't think we need to go into Best Latin Album or Best Tropical Latin Album.
That definitely needed to be two different fucking categories.
Do you know Best Regional Roots Music Album is an option?
Is that for black people wearing dumb shit on their head?
I'm not sure. Best Comedy Album went to The Age of Spin and Deep in the Heart of Texas, Dave Chappelle.
I don't know. I saw better stand-up than that last year, but that's, look, you get to anything kind of that mainstream with stand-up comedy. I think Chappelle is about as good as you're going to get. It's better than Jeff Dunham or something.
The puppet guy?
Yeah.
Is that who you're going to see this week?
No, I'm going to see Brett Erickson.
I was joking. I didn't really think you were going to see Jeff Dunham. Super Bowl's this Sunday, February 5th, on Fox in Houston, Texas, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be the New England Patriots versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Any thoughts on the Super Bowl?
Well, happy birthday to my brother. Once again, the Super Bowl falls on his birthday.
Oh, interesting.
Like almost every year it does. I'm rooting for the Patriots. Which,
really?
Well, I don't really want to. I don't really want to because it's so, like, easy to root for the Patriots. It's so, like, bandwagonish. Like, but, like, I'm not really, really rooting for them. But I do like the, I like seeing things that are special. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing I heard was, maybe you told me, I don't know, somebody did, that if they win the Super Bowl, Brady and Belichick will have as many Super Bowl rings, more Super Bowl rings than every other franchise in football except for the Steelers.
Yeah,
which is insane. I mean, what they're doing is something incredible, and that's better than watching fans from one of the worst cities in the world celebrate any kind of happiness. Philadelphia sucks. Their fans are horrible fans. And they're not even like Bills fans are crazy, but there's a little bit of a charm to them. Philly fans are just assholes. And they're not even charming ass. Like Boston's got some dickhead fans. New York's got some dickhead fans. But, like, people in Philadelphia are just mean. And they're not even like funny. It's just like, yeah, we're gonna fucking, oh yeah, you guys, donate to cancer? We're gonna mock your cancer donations and pelt you with batteries. Fuck you, man. So they're gonna, and plus they're gonna be pilloried in, well, they would be pilloried in any other city. Minneapolis is full of nice people. Otherwise they should get mocked bad cause, like it was like Minneapolis, one of their star players like has like some charity for children or some shit and they were raising all this money and the Philly fans like after the game put some banner up like fuck this dude, go Phillies and all this. Like, sorry, go Eagles. Like really? Like that's really low, man. Even I think that's low and I love heels.
The big story in these parts was Tom Brady. He goes on this radio show, WEEI, every week after the game and usually talks about the game or whatever's going on for 30 minutes. And he went on this past week and said he probably wouldn't be doing the show anymore because some other personality on the station called his daughter an annoying little pissant.
My mom laughed when I told her this story.
Well, I laughed when I saw it too because everything, like people are posting about this on Facebook and Twitter, like it's all over the place. And I know it's like a regional thing and I probably see it more than, you know, somebody in Florida or wherever. But, like I was laughing because like that's Brady's, right? He doesn't even have to do this show. He doesn't have to promote on WEEI. He doesn't have to do that. And that's fine. If he's pissed off at the station and wants to defend his kid, good for him. But the station also suspended this guy for a week, which I'm like, of all the things people say on sports radio or talk radio or Howard Stern, Bubba the Love Sponge, all this Rush Limbaugh, whatever this crazy people flying off, saying crazy shit, disparaging people left and right. It's like, kids can be annoying. And on top of it, Brady has this documentary out about like, Tom and time and how he's managed to stay healthy and play at this age and still be an elite quarterback at 40 years old. And his kids in the documentary screaming in the background while he's talking about getting ice cream or some bullshit like little kids do. Like, it wasn't even like Brady, it wasn't Brady, this outrageous comment.
Like, Brady was, like, asked about it, and he's like, I don't want the guy to get fired. Like, right. Even Brady's like, you guys are just going, like, all right. Like, I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, and I know right. why they suspended him. I get it. You insulted the biggest draw in the history of New England, the guy that, like, seriously, it's Tom Brady in Boston. I don't know if there's a bigger star in a city than that. And so you don't want to piss that guy off. You said it before. I think it's kind of a little bit to Brady's credit, I guess, as a person that even does the show, because what the fuck does Tom Brady need to do local talk radio for? So I get the, like, you know, hey, guys, don't insult him. I think it makes Brady look bad. You know, you never want to be the guy that looks like he's oversensitive about this shit. If anything, it should have just been handled in private, and Brady should be like, hey, what the fuck was that about? And they should have been like, call the guy and be like, dude, what are you doing? And maybe the guy says, hey, Tom, I'm sorry. And right. you move on. Instead, it becomes this big deal, and it probably wouldn't be a big deal, but it's Super Bowl weekend, and there's just nothing going on. There's been no storylines whatsoever that I've seen super sports-wise. Like, they're just getting swallowed up by the Trump machine right now, and that right. fucking memo's coming down. Nobody's watching that Super Bowl now, motherfuckers.
Yeah, I mean, but same time, it's like, that's what, like, talk radio is. You talk a bunch of shit so people listen to your show. Like, people say outrageous things all the time. And then the scheme of things, saying a kid's annoying is not outrageous to me. A lot of kids are annoying.
Do people say outrageous things about Tom Brady, though, ever? It's Tom Brady.
Well, when the Deflategate shit was going on, not a lot, but depending on who you listen to, a lot of them said it looked like Brady was pretty shady and he probably had something to do with the, well, yeah, I mean, you don't see him actually deflating the balls, but it's like he broke his cell phone and, you know.
No, he did it. I'm just saying that a couple of fans maybe said something, but for the most part, nationwide, the reputation of Patriots fans for just the incredible devotion to coming up with the, you know, you see it with the weird ass conspiracy theories and all this stuff. They do everything for that man. He is a god to those right. fucking losers who just never made it out of their hometown, never made it out of Southie, don't have much more than a high school education. They can't get a job anymore because the damn Mexican took his job. And guess what? That Mexican, he did take your job because he's willing to do it and he does it better and he's more grateful for it, you miserable fuck. So just support your little golden pony there. Just watch your little show horse prance around for a bit. Pretend like he really gives a shit about you while he goes back to banging his Brazilian billionaire supermodel wife. He ain't one of you. He's a better than you, and he'll never be one of you.
And that's the Super Bowl preview on halfguarded.com. I know you're a big Mr. Rogers fan, right?
Uh-huh.
Do you know there's going to be a movie based on his life, and Tom Hanks is going to star as Mr. Rogers and You Are My Friend?
I saw Tom Hanks and Mr. Rogers trending somewhere, and I thought, oh, I must be playing Mr. Rogers in a movie, and that's seems like a pretty damn good fit there. You got the most beloved actor of a generation, the guy who's never had a real hint of – I shouldn't say he's had no hint of scandal. I think old Tommy Hanks has had some help hiding shit because he's got a son who's fucking crazy. Like, tattoos all over the place, drugged out of his mind, and just nobody talks about it. We all just pretend like Colin Hanks is his only kid or some shit. But he's got a real fucked up one, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But then you got Mr. Rogers, who is literally the greatest human being made. He's the finest example of a human America's ever produced. He just never did anything wrong, and he was simply nice, unapologetically, unironically, a nice guy that just wanted to help children, and he didn't rape them, and he's like the only person left that worked with kids that didn't rape the kid, and that's so important these days.
Slim pickings. You're My Friend, with its title taken from one of Rogers' signature songs, is inspired by a real-life friendship between Rogers and journalist Tom Jeannot. Jeannot is depicted as a cynical scribe who begrudgingly accepts an assignment to write a profile article on the iconic Mr. Rogers. He finds his life perspective transformed in the process.
It's funny. I don't obviously know the story there, but I can kind of already picture the beat is going to hit, and that's kind of disappointing. Because even then, it shows that they don't really understand Mr. Rogers. Because the only way they can explain him is a frame of reference as the catalyst for change in someone else. And so you get the idea of Mr. Rogers is so nice, blah, blah, blah. But they haven't figured out a way to just make a movie about just Mr. Rogers. Tell us who he is. No, it's got to be he warms the heart of the cynical journalist. But that's really the story of the journalist. So what I'm saying is, fuck you, Hollywood. Leave Mr. Rogers alone. That's how he would want me to say it, too, by the way.
Mm, yes, very, very well put.
I watched Mr. Rogers every goddamn day as a child. He was my friend.
I didn't realize that show ran from 1968 to 2001. I had no idea he was still doing that in 2001.
He started the show in, I think it's Pittsburgh. Cause he hated television. He was not a fan of television. He was a legitimate Methodist minister, went to a Bible college, got his degree and all that. And he saw television, he saw the product out there, and he didn't like it. He just thought it was, you know, coarse crap. And this is back in the 60s, so it must have been, imagine what he thought today. And then, he recognized the potential good that you could do with this medium. And so he just kind of started doing the show, and he really was just that guy. He was in the military, I think, before that. But, just a real good stand-up guy. Who never got, you know, political or weird and always stayed in his lane and knew what he was doing. And like I say, the greatest human being America's ever produced.
How do you think you would feel about this bill in California? It's proposing to make it illegal for restaurant servers to give guests plastic straws unless requested, with the threat of $1,000 fine or jail time attached.
I think you would say, can't we all just get along and hug each other? We don't need to put people in jail. How about if you guys use some fewer straws and you try to understand that some people, it's difficult for them to put the cup to their mouth, so they need a straw. And aren't we all friends now? I know. I saw this story. I want to get outraged. It's easy to get outraged and be like, because it's the most pathetic example of government overreach. Like, some asshole is so petty that he wants to legislate. It's not using straws. It's offering customers straws. Like, if customers ask for a straw, they'd be allowed to have one. But it'd be a crime to offer somebody a straw. And I know it's saving the environment, blah, 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 but it's so just petty. This, you know, with everything else that's going on in the world, but even if nothing was going on in the world, this would be pretty pathetic. But I can't really care, because it's just one dumb state legislator in California. If the bill got passed, that'd be one thing. Like, I get angry when California takes it from a felony down to a misdemeanor to knowingly infect someone with AIDS. That really pisses me off. That is immoral. This is not going to pass. It's not going to happen. I'd rather focus on the fact that, you know, you can give somebody AIDS on purpose in California now.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, and that it was stigmatizing otherwise, and that would hurt the gay community's feelings. I don't know what the fuck's going on there, because, like, hello, you're the community that's going to get killed by AIDS, but whatever. I'm not going to get AIDS. I don't have sex with men. My needles are always clean, so I'm not worried about it. The same state also that made it against the law on some level for teachers to have guns on them, which I'm not a big gun control guy, but I can't believe teachers are allowed to have guns in the first place. Feels like that's a bit of an odd one for me, but okay. And then they took away, there used to be, sentencing guidelines. Committing a crime with a gun, the gun was an aggravating factor, so you could, you know, get additional years because they want to, you know, not have people using guns. They made that legal now. They got rid of that law because too many black people were going to jail for it. It was disproportionately apparently affecting the black community. So rather than figure out, hey, what's going on? They just said, well, we're just not going to make that a crime because too many black people are doing it. Yeah, that state's fucking weird. So if they're going to do something with straws, man, whatever. I'll sneak in straws if I can get some legal weed. That's a trade-off I'm willing to make.
Ooh, okay. Good to know.
I am the dumb bastard that could just be placated with bread and circuses. Like, whenever they talk about that, or just give them drugs, keep them all drugged up, I'll be like, yeah, no, that sounds like a good idea. I'll do it. I could be happy. I never understood the criticism of Nero. They give him bread and circuses. Like, what do people want? We want to eat and watch sports and shit. That's all I want in life. That's why everybody's pissed off at the fucking players kneeling in the NFL. I just want my fucking sports. I let you guys run the world, and the 13 bankers up there at Goldman Sachs can all launder their money and do this and that. I don't know what's going on. I just want to watch football and drink. And they're trying to take that away from me, damn it. Now I can't watch football without seeing kneeling, and I can't use a straw to drink my fucking beer. Clearly, I don't drink beer.
Yeah, with the straws, unusual. I remember in college people would say, like, if you drank beer through a straw, you would get drunk quicker. Like, it's not how it works.
Well, people in college they're learning, you see. They're growing as adults.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I filled them in. While we're on the topic of the law, a couple police stories for you. In Toronto, it's being reported that two police officers from 13 Division raided a dispensary, a marijuana dispensary, Saturday night, and then early Sunday morning ate some of the raided edibles while still on the job.
Oops.
When they didn't get high fast enough, the cops allegedly made the rookie mistake of consuming more edibles, according to a police source. The weed eventually did kick in, at which point the officers were allegedly so high they had to call their colleagues for help.
That's amazing.
The stoned officers got so freaked out when they began to hallucinate and called fellow cops and an ambulance from a police car. But when backup arrived, one of them allegedly ran off in a panic, and a cop following on foot slipped and injured his head on ice.
Jeez. I mean, it's amazing because it's the most – everybody makes this mistake with edibles. Everybody does it, especially the first time. But even if you're used to them, everybody makes a mistake if they take the edible, and like a half an hour later, they're like, I don't know, it's not working. Something's off here or something. Because that happens. Edibles aren't exactly consistent. And then they take a little bit more, and all of a sudden everything kicks in, and you're going, oh, fuck. I get way higher than I ever thought was possible. Because also edibles metabolize differently in your system than smoking it. And so it does produce more of a hallucinogenic effect. And it just hits you, and you don't know when it's going to end. You have no control over it. You're just like, it's not like being drunk or you have some idea of like, maybe this goes away. Like, you get in that weird state. I can see where, you know, I would never actually call the cops on myself, especially if I was a cop. But I feel like there's other options besides calling the cops. You could like just call your buddy who is a cop and be like, hey Joe, I might have taken some edibles. I'm freaking out, man. Could you just get a paddy wagon over here and take care of me for a second?
Can you imagine when the other cops show up, one of the cops runs off and one of the regular sober cops chases him and falls and smashes his head on the ice? Like, what a bunch of fuck-ups they are up in Toronto. That's the home of Drake.
You gotta admire Canada. In America, our cop stories involve cops accidentally murdering children. And in Canada, their stories are the cop got high and another cop slipped on some ice chasing him.
It's true. It's very true. And in our other police officer story of the week, this is coming out like just today, I think. The headline reads, Baltimore cops carried toy guns to plant on people they shot.
See what I'm talking about? The compare and contrast. In Baltimore, they're carrying toy guns to frame black men with, and in Canada, they're doing weed.
One officer involved in the city's massive corruption scandal said officers kept the replicas in case we accidentally hit somebody or got into a shootout so we could plant them.
Well, okay.
To serve and protect, baby.
It's like the old Dave Chappelle skit where they just sprinkle some crack on the guy. Somebody did that for real. But instead of crack, they used toy guns. Okay, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to say, okay, this would give us a reason to shoot the guy. But it's a good reason if the guy has a real gun. If he doesn't have a real gun, even if it looks like it's a real gun, you're going to have enough people going, but it wasn't a real gun. Like, you should be trained to spot this. So their best case scenario is they're going to make themselves still look like really dumb cops. They couldn't even come up with an excuse to make themselves, like, why didn't you just carry knives with you? You just drop a knife on the guy. Then he's got a deadly weapon. And a knife is scary and you can see it and there's a knife. No, you find plastic toy guns, which you, there's no good reason for that. If you're a cop, you have a knife, you'd be, hey, I'm a cop, I need a knife. Don't you need a knife? I'm a cop. I need to have things like this. Cops don't need toy guns. That's a really weird thing for people to have real guns to also have toy guns. You generally, you don't want to have real guns near the toy guns because you might grab the wrong fucking gun at the wrong time. This is like, this is actually how children die in houses because somebody left the toy gun next to the real gun and the kid grabbed the real one and shot himself.
Detective Maurice Ward, who's already pleaded guilty to corruption charges, testified that he and his partners were told to carry the replicas and BB guns in case we accidentally hit somebody or got into a shootout so we could plant them. The directive allegedly came from the team sergeant, Wayne Jenkins. Though Ward didn't say whether or not the tactic was ever used, Detective Marcus Taylor, another cop swept up in the scandal, was carrying a fake gun almost identical to his service weapon when he was arrested last year.
Seriously, dozens and dozens of really bad criminals are going to be released from jail because of this. Every single person that was ever convicted that was arrested by these guys will probably be let out of jail and will for sure be getting new trials. That's why you don't plant fucking evidence. Well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but that's one of the reasons.
Like, it's funny, because whenever I see, like these riots and whatnot in the streets, I'm like, ah, it seems crazy. But reading some of this, like, corruption story in Baltimore, it's like, I kind of don't blame these people. I'd be pissed off, too. I'm not saying I'd fuck up a Starbucks or anything, but... I kind of don't blame them, at the same time.
I don't really blame anybody in this. It's easy because we live in like ideal worlds where justice and the police work, but they live in worlds where not only do like they get treated like shit by the cops like this, but the cops, I don't think cops start off doing this like because they hate people. I think just over time they're like, we got to do something. And this is a way to get, like, they might be framing people for crimes they didn't commit, but these are all people that have committed a lot of crimes. And if you think about this as, like, akin to a war zone, it makes a lot more sense. And the cops I've talked to over the years have, to a man, in white, brown, black, yellow, whatever, male, female, I don't know if they're really female cops, they're kind of a myth, but they have all basically said when it comes to, like, the inner city, like, some of these areas, they go, it is a fucking war zone. Most of them just literally try not to die that day.
Right.
And so, I mean, these communities, it's so beyond fucked. Like, it's systemic. When people say, like, there's a systemic abuse, it's like, yeah, there is, but it's not like it's systemic against, it would be in, Omaha, where you'd be like, okay, something is abnormal. Like, no, the populace is abnormal. They get abnormal cops. And look, I'm the white guy from the suburbs who's saying, the blacks have it coming, all right? They did this to themselves, and...
Listen to this. The revelation is just one of many egregious abuses that have come out of the sprawling trial. Baltimore's biggest police corruption scandal in memory. Prosecutors say the squad, which was tasked with getting illegal guns off the streets, abused its power by robbing suspects and innocent people, raiding homes without warrants, and selling confiscated drugs, among other crimes. But the BB gun testimony is particularly disturbing in light of 12-year-old Tamir Rice's death in 2014, the 13-year-old in Baltimore who was shot twice by cops in 2016 after allegedly sprinting from them with a replica gun in his hand. And the 86 people fatally shot by police in 2015 and 2016 who were spotted carrying toy guns.
Oh. Okay. That's really... I mean, I understand that these things happen sometimes. Kids got a gun, somebody's got a toy gun, and they get shot on accident.
You know what should be banned?
Six times.
Toy guns. Get rid of toy guns.
For a while there, they had, I think it's still the rule, they have to have those orange caps on the tip for this reason, except for everybody realized you just take the cap, the tip off, and it looks like a real gun.
Right.
Because nobody's going to play cops and robbers with an orange gun. It just looks stupid. You know, I want something that looks real, damn it. I just live in an area where if I run around with a machine gun in my hand, everybody goes, that must be fake. Like, nobody would ever see me running down the street with a machine gun and they go, well, actually now, because I'm a grown man, that would be kind of weird. That's true. In this day and age, I fit the profile to a T of a man that if he's walking down the street with a machine gun, you take me out because you know I'm just going for violence. I'm just a lonely, bitter, drug-addicted white man in the suburbs. And if I'm walking around with a machine gun and I live down the street from a high school, trouble's afoot.
I would avoid you.
I'm surprised they let me go to hotels in Vegas. I can't bring a duffel bag with me anymore, that's for sure.
Residents in Bangor, Maine came just 28 beer cans short of setting a world record. Attendees at the city's annual chamber
Thanks
dinner.
Thanks for going to AA that night, Frank, you dick.
Attendees at the city's annual chamber dinner last week were attempting to break the record for simultaneously opening beer cans. The vast majority of the beers were supplied by Gigan Brothers Brewing, and hundreds of attendees did the honors of opening them at the same time. The brewer-based beer maker says it sent video of the attempt to Guinness World Records and got word that the effort did not break the record. The record was set in Japan in 2016 with 1,149 cans opened simultaneously. The Bangor attempt managed 1,122, which is a record for the city itself.
Oh, I'm glad for the city itself has a record. They just barely beat that record set by the high school football team that night that they all took turns on sherry. But yeah, how do you fuck this up? Yeah, all you have to do, the record is a very simple record. It's counting how many cans of beer are in a room. That's the record. And then it's just as far as getting enough people to all hold their cans. And then you say, when you hear the sound, open your can. This is real simple. In fact, there's no point in going that far and not breaking the record. You just look like an asshole if you open up 1,000 cans of beer at the same time for apparently no reason at all. That's the most American thing you could do, except for Japan beat us at it.
Yeah, of all the places, Japan. I also feel like this would be an easy, I guess you can't really have cans at stadiums anymore, but why doesn't just some brewery pass out 2,000 beers at the next minor league baseball game and everybody opens them out at the same time? Like, this would be an easy record to break.
That is a genius idea. That is minor league baseball promotion written all over it. That's awesome.
Free beer night.
Yeah, everybody gets a can of beer and it gets to be in a world record. Oh, right. That's genius.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. And lastly, we have a United Airlines story. We haven't done one of them in a while. Nobody's been dragged off the plane and beat up recently. But this one caught my eye because sometimes I deal with similar situations like this at the restaurant. Not just like this, but same idea. A female traveler was recently banned from taking a large emotional support peacock on board a United Airlines flight. She had offered to buy the bird its own plane ticket. Nonetheless, the airline refused to let the bird board at Newark Airport in New Jersey, saying it did not meet guidelines due to its weight and size. United says this was explained to the traveler before she arrived at Newark.
If it had been a different size, if it had been a little smaller peacock, they would have been like, yep, come on right on through, peacock. They have a size of peacock that's allowed to fly in first class.
After 6 hours at the airport, the exotic bird and its human companions decided to take to the road and instead drive across the U.S. The peacock, reportedly called Dexter, belongs to Brooklyn-based artist Ventico, who documents his life on social media.
Oh, my gosh, yes. A Brooklyn-based artist that documents his life on social media definitely has an emotional therapy peacock. Fucking asshole probably brews his own beer, too.
I've never left the house without having at least one person react, Ventico told a local culture website in 2017. The artist, whose real name is not known, told Bedford and Bowery that the feathery giant really changed my life in a positive way.
No, it didn't, you asshole. It's a fucking bird. It's a dangerous wild bird. This asshole has a peacock and he lives in Brooklyn. That's not good for, that's not good for the bird. It's a bird. It shouldn't live in Brooklyn. It's an exotic bird. It's going to get run over by the D train. The 444. The 444 is going to get him.
Airlines have allowed some passengers with emotional or psychiatric problems to take therapy animals on board with them. But the number of emotional support animals has been rising in recent years, sparking suggestions that people are abusing the system.
Yeah, no
shit.
In
2014, a woman was escorted off a U.S. Airways flight when her pig named Hobie defecated and squealed before the plane took off.
I mean, I get that there were, this is the problem with humanity. We do something good, and then assholes come along and ruin it. This is why we can't have nice things. There are people out there who really, somebody looked at it and goes, you know what? I know it sounds kind of dumb, but this person has genuine, you know, psychological problems, and the dog really does make her life better. And we all go, well, that's kind of weird, but some of us are a little high strung and all right. And then next thing you know, some asshole's bringing a pig and a peacock, a partridge and a pear tree, whatever they can fucking get under an airplane.
Traveler Jody Smalley from Seattle made headlines after taking her turkey on a pre-Christmas flight home in 2015.
Okay, that's just weird.
Cynics were surprised to hear that the bird made the return trip back in one piece and wearing a special bird nappy.
I can't bring a fucking open container of water into the airport, and this motherfucker is bringing a turkey? I couldn't think about it. You would not be able to bring, like, a frozen turkey on an airplane, but you can bring a live one. It's a turkey. What the fuck is wrong with you? What the arrogance of some human being that said to themselves, I think I can bring my turkey or peacock or pig on the airplane and that will be okay. And yet they were right. They let that pig on the plane. It would have been fine if it just held its bladder until takeoff. They would have had a pig running up and down the aisles at 10,000 feet or some shit, dropping turds in front of people as everybody looks in horror, and they were going to let that
happen. I think we talked about it last year. Like, they'll store animals, like, underneath or whatever, like in you know, little crates or whatever. But remember that story about the world's biggest bunny? It died underneath the plane.
Yeah, that's how animals travel, under the plane. And you don't do it because you're worried that your dog's going to die. I would never fly with my dog because I wouldn't want to take the one in a million chance that it would freeze to death in the cargo. Yet this asshole has a fucking peacock and a turkey and a pig with him.
On the plane.
The fucking plane. Old McDonald. It's Old McDonald had a fucking airline.
We keep getting, it's usually in the summer when there's more tourists around, but people call and be like, can I bring in such and such? And I'm like, not, is it a service animal? You gotta have, you know, tags or a license. Like, seeing eye dogs was always the classic.
Yeah,
like,
that's fine.
Yeah, of course you can bring in your seeing eye dog. Sure, no problem. But in the last couple of years, we've had like people with like little dogs trying to sneak them in their purses and shit. And it's just like, what the hell?
Why would you bring sneak in a dog?
Cause they have a big ass purse and they've got like a chihuahua, like Paris Hilton. I don't know.
It's your dog. What's the point of having your dog with you if you have to sneak it in? You can't, like, take it out and play with it. It's got to stay in the fucking purse. You can't do anything.
I don't know what the theory is or that emotional support shit. It sounds like horse shit to me. Maybe it helps some people.
Where do you buy a peacock? The only place I've ever seen a peacock is at the zoo. And I feel like it'd be really weird if you walked up to the zoo and be like, hey, can I buy a peacock? It's going to make me feel better when I fly.
There's got to be some sort of exotic animal bullshit. It's like when they find the tigers roaming the streets in Georgia. And they're like, remember the floods in Houston? A bunch of like gators were freed and there were all these weird animals around.
But at least those are like crazy rich people.
Right.
I understand crazy rich dude buying a tiger. Because he's got the money and connections to have it. Dickhead artist who follows his life on Instagram in Brooklyn. I feel like I wouldn't give him the license to own an exotic anything. I wouldn't give that guy a license to drive a car. I wouldn't give him a license to be a daycare facility operator, let alone have a fucking exotic bird. I realize that running a daycare is probably more important than an exotic bird, but I feel like the exotic bird license is a little more difficult to get. I don't know, a lot of incompetent people out there running daycares. I don't really hear about too many incompetent exotic bird handlers.
No.
I get exotic bird handler monthly, so I would know.
Bird handler sounds creepy.
Well, I think a guy in Brooklyn who's an artist on Instagram is probably definitely handling a bird.
Okay, anything else going on?
That's why
it
makes him feel good. No, nothing else is going on.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. Check out the website. You can catch us on Twitter, halfguarded, Instagram, halfguarded. There's a Facebook. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Get up, cocksuckers. It's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot. It's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty. Don't forget who the fuck we are. You understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean, he's gonna be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's gonna be an island. It's gonna glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open and get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.